Thank you. Good evening. This is the City of Morro Bay City Council meeting. This is the regular meeting of Tuesday, June 9th, 2020. It is 5:30 p.m. This meeting is being held via teleconference. Madam Clerk, will you establish a quorum, please?
Yes, thank you, Mayor. Councilmember Addis has not joined the meeting yet. Councilmember Davis?
Yes, I'm present.
Councilmember Heller?
Here.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes, I'm here.
And Mayor Heading?
Yes, present. Thank you. So we do have a quorum. I'll call the meeting to order then. And pursuant to Section 3 of Executive Order N-29-20, issued by Governor Newsom on March 17th, this meeting will be conducted telephonically through Zoom and broadcast live on cable channel 20 and streamed on the city website. Please be advised that pursuant to the executive order and to ensure the health and safety of the public by limiting human contact that could spread the COVID-19 virus, the Veterans Hall will not be open for the meeting. And if you would like to participate as a member of the public during public comment, our clerk will put directions on the screen for you if you're either calling in or if you're on the Zoom portion of the meeting. A reminder to unmute yourself on your own device to make sure that you will be heard. And with that, I will ask Councilmember Davis if you will lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
I will share my screen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Councilmember Davis. And with that, I will ask our esteemed lawyer, counselor, Chris Niermeyer, do we have a closed session report, sir?
Good evening, Mr. Mayor. No reportable action from closed session.
Great. Thank you. That brings us to Mayor and Council Members' report. Let me start with Council Member Heller. Sir, anything to report this evening?
Yes, I'd like to report that some of you know I'm working on getting some performers, musicians, jugglers, and other street performers to liven up the Embarcadero this summer. Had good input and support from Dr. Pruitt at Morro Bay High School, as well as Dr. Breitbart, I believe, is at Cuesta College. So I've been talking to a lot of performers, and I hope to get some people out there soon, meeting with Scott Collins on Friday to talk about the logistics. But I encourage anyone who's interested in performing this kind of street performance of almost any kind to reach out to me, and let's talk. And that's my announcement. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Councilmember McPherson.
Thank you. I actually have no announcements, but I just want to say that if anyone wants to speak with me, please call me. I am still kind of sheltering in place, so I would appreciate any calls, any concerns. 772-1452. Thanks.
Thank you so much. Councilmember Addis.
I don't have many announcements either, but I do want to invite everybody to join the Wear a Mask Slow County campaign. And you can just send a photo to womensmarchslow@gmail.com of you wearing your mask. We've received a number of emails on this, and I know it's on the agenda tonight. And I know the CDC recommends mask wearing, and Dr. Fauci just said that he's absolutely certain that folks that wear a mask are preventing spread, and we've seen a spike in cases here in California. So if you'd like to join that campaign, Wear a Mask in Slow County, you can find it at womensmarchslow@gmail.com or just go to the website womensmarchslow.com.
Thank you for that. Let's see, Councilmember Davis, sir.
Yes, thank you. First, I want to thank our police department for the way they conduct themselves under great pressure. They are professional, they are compassionate,
And I think they are the model of what every community in America would like to see working in their cities. Next, I want to recognize one of our special Morro Bay citizens, Jane Heath. Jane is our representative to the County Library Foundation, representing Morro Bay Friends of the Library. Jane also served on the board of directors for the Maritime Museum when the museum was engaged in a major fundraising campaign to build the current museum next to the Triangle parking lot. And most valuable at this time, Jane is our hometown attorney. She's been conducting pro bono education seminars and providing free legal assistance to our business community, helping our small business owners work through all the different grants, laws, and regulations around COVID. So thank you, Jane, for helping our community. And finally, SLOCOG board met last week and approved a number of SB1 grant leverage applications. And one of those is for the Morro Bay to Cayucas bike and pedestrian connector, $727,000 to maximize leverage for an active transportation program grant application. And that's all my announcements.
Thank you. Thank you for those announcements. I personally would like to start just with a moment of silence. I waited until my announcements to do that. Just ask you in your own way to think of George Floyd and the tragedy that occurred with regard to that and the issues facing this nation today. So let's just take a moment of silence, please. Thank you. I also wanted to thank Chief Cox and our police department for what I consider to be an excellent job. I recently had the opportunity to review a number of police policies that were resurrected as a result of some of the current issues that have been floating around with regard to the events surrounding the death of Mr. Floyd. And I'm just going to read from what I consider to be a portion of a statement made by our chief in responding to the issues that I think is important for our community to hear. And Chief Cox says this, police use of force has once again become a major topic of discussion in this nation due to the graphic, and in this case, clearly unlawful use of force by a group of officers on a citizen, and he's referring to the issue with Mr. Floyd. It is important to view the use of force in its proper context locally. While our community and our region differ greatly from other areas, we are often faced with the same issues many other agencies must contend with. Our department recognizes and respects the value of all human life and dignity without prejudice to anyone. Vesting officers with the authority to use reasonable force and to protect the public welfare requires monitoring, evaluation, and a careful balancing of all interests. The Morro Bay Police Department has a history of minimal use of force incidents and is consistent with well-established laws, policies, standards, and community expectations. The memo goes on to address a number of issues regarding the potential use of force, the significant training and restraint that officers are trained to utilize. And I just want to thank Commander Watkins, who I believe is with us this evening. Chief Cox is away. Commander Watkins, if you could please extend our thanks to the Morro Bay Police Department for all of the work that they do and the respect that this community has for their service to not only to protect but to respect the rights of all people's groups and all citizens. And I just wanted to publicly make that statement and thank the department for the work that they do. I also briefly wanted to give you an update on new guidance from the governor on COVID-19. On Friday, June 5th, the state health officials issued new guidance for several business sectors to reopen no sooner than this Friday, June 12th. Our county health officer, Dr. Borenstein, reviewed each guidance document and has approved the reopening of the additional industries. The new state guidances include the following: statewide guidance for child care day camps, casinos operated by sovereign tribal nations, entertainment, production, music, film, and television industry guidelines, professional sports without live audiences, and more important to our county, campgrounds, RV parks, outdoor recreation, hotels, lodging, and short-term rentals, card rooms, satellite wagering facilities, racetracks, family entertainment centers, movie theaters, restaurants, bars, wineries, museums, galleries, zoos, aquariums, and fitness facilities. As the stay-at-home orders are modified, it's essential that businesses will need to take all steps necessary to ensure the safety of workers and customers. Key business practices include physical distancing to the maximum extent possible, use of face coverings by employees and patrons, frequent hand washing, regular cleaning and disinfecting, and training employees on their COVID-19 prevention plan. Businesses planning to resume and complete the self-certification form, which is available at emergencyslow.org/reopening. Again, emergencyslow.org/reopening must complete that self-evaluation. The county is committed to moving forward and reopening our communities. The state has given the guidelines. Our local public health officer has reviewed them and concurs with moving forward to reopen the sectors that I just outlined for you. Further information will follow. Again, this is effective Friday, June 12th, and you can get more information at readyslow.org. That's readyslow.org. I will also just announce that with regard to COVID-19, I'm not going to go over all the statistics, just mention to you that we have had 6 cases in Morro Bay for a number of weeks, and we've added 1 new case as of last week. So our total now stands at 7 cases in Morro Bay. Thank you. With that, I'll turn to Mr. Collins. Any announcements, sir?
No announcements. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for that. With that, we have no presentations this evening. I will move to the consent agenda. And unless an item is pulled by the council, these actions will be approved via motion. Before that, I'll go ahead and open up public comment. In general, this is for public comment for items that are either on the agenda for which you can't stay and would like to give public comment on now, and or items that are not on the agenda that you wish to speak to. So this is general public comment, and I will follow that with a separate public comment period for the consent agenda. So again, general public comment is open. And Zeke, do we have anybody in the line?
Yes, sir. We have Betty Winholtz to start.
Okay.
You are on the air, Betty.
Betty, are you there?
Somebody has another device.
Okay,
open.
I'm here if it's okay to speak.
Yes,
you're on. Betty, go ahead. This is general public comment.
Uh-huh. Okay, thank you.
Yes, go ahead, please.
Thank you. I want to give out two thank yous. One to, I assume, the Public Works Department for the white striping at the intersections. I feel much better as a driver to see where the lines are. And as a pedestrian, I feel safer that cars are going to stop in the right place for me. So thank you for that. I also want to say thank you for the police department.
Betty, I'm going to hold your time. We have an echo in the background. Do you have two devices on at the same time?
Oh, is that better? Is the echo gone?
Yes.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Sorry about that. The second thank you is for the police department for the good protection during our march on Saturday, and to the young man who organized the Black Lives Matter march. It was very safe and very comfortable, and we were allowed to get our message out, and I much appreciate that. And for the people, I think there were about 300 people that came. Third, I want to make an announcement that Monterey Bay Community Power is having a policy meeting tomorrow at 1 o'clock. And if you go to their website, Monterey Bay Community Power, you can find the Zoom link, and they will be discussing whether to accept or refine their acceptance of nuclear power into their bailiwick of where they get their energy. And this was an item that's been controversial for a couple of months, and people are invited, encouraged to tune into that or send emails. And again, that website is Monterey Bay Community Power if you want to have input. And then my last comment is actually a question. I saw last week in the intersection of Quintana and South Bay Boulevard that there was a huge concrete slab that was being laid at the intersection. And I don't know if that's related to the WRF or if it's something that will be in the way of the WRF. And I was just asking for an exclamation of what was happening there. Thank you.
Thank you, Betty. Zeke, go ahead. Next public comment.
John Weiss, you're on the air.
Welcome, John.
Thank you very much, Mayor and Council and listeners. Wanted to say a few things. First of all, I wanted to also echo the compliments to our police department, and especially regarding the peaceful protest that took place. Also, I wanted to make a comment that I have concern about the increased blight, if you will, because of the number of businesses that are closing, which I think are a matter of public record. I also want to compliment Betty Winholz, who had an article that was posted as an open letter to the city council, and I assume the city council received it, but for public consumption, I normally would never support a city sales tax increase. I think we're taxed plenty, but her suggestion was to pause the wharf project, consider possibly making the current facility more feasible, given that Cayucas are going to go offline come September and then remove themselves in December or thereabouts. They seem to be running ahead of schedule, and we could save probably millions of dollars doing that, and we might be able to reduce the rate for rate payers for citizens and businesses substantially, maybe even 50%, which then would allow us to allow me to support a sales tax increase, which would give us greater revenue for the city, which I know the city is starved for revenue. And also would also eliminate the need to tear up Quintana Road, which I've been a strong opponent of. So, you know, I want to offer those as suggestions. If you haven't seen the op-ed, I would look at the Estero Bay News. It's pretty bold and it's available. I think there's 10,000 copies that were circulated. Also, I would like to compliment the Estero Bay News for the fact that they sent out in a special edition, which had every graduating senior for both for Morro Bay and Cayucas, or Cambria rather, which includes Cayucas. And I thought that was an awesome tribute to our seniors who unfortunately didn't have their normal graduation ceremony, which I've attended many times, having two students graduate from Morro Bay High School. So with that, I want to conclude my comments with asking that you have a great meeting tonight. Thank you very much.
Thank you, John. Zeke, next person for public comment, please.
Carol, you're on the line.
Welcome, Carol.
Somebody else has a device on that is feeding back.
Somebody, Carol, are you there? Carol? So, Zeke, maybe you can make a general comment about the feedback and what people need to do.
Yes,
right,
sir.
I'm here. Okay. This is Carol Truesdale. Can you hear me?
Yes,
okay,
we can.
Yes, Carol. Thank you, Carol. Welcome.
All right. Greeting members of the council and staff. I'm Carol Truesdale, resident and homeowner in Morro Bay since 1995. So I've been around for a while. First, I want to thank council for revisiting the wearing of masks in our city, since there have been proven experiments whereby it was found that the coronavirus transmission rate via respiratory droplets or airborne particles dropped by as much as 75% when surgical masks or masks were used. Second, just for the summer, really consider parklets along the Embarcadero, starting from Beach Street through Market and other areas throughout our city. Have a simple plan for the parklets that everyone follows who wants the additional space. I'm sure I know of one councilman who would put together a great and simple plan for people to know. On the weekend, close down the Embarcadero from vehicle access from Beach to Market. This allows families to walk down the Embarcadero from one end to the other and give those restaurants extra space for safe distancing and extra dining spots for people to do takeaways and dine in designated safe distance spots. At the same time, try paid parking by utilizing the lots at the corners of Pacific and Embarcadero and other lot that was formerly used by Distancios on Pacific and further on down the area through the Rock, where people park all the way down to Tysons Park. Ask people to pay $10 a day for parking. We have Farmers Market on Saturday. Folks cannot park along Main Street and parts of Morro Bay Boulevard. Post the no parking signs along the Morro Bay Boulevard, similar to what we do for the car show. Maybe the owner of the vacant lawn on Main Street and Beach would open up the chain link fence, consider a paid parking area where someone can collect the $10 from each vehicle, and I'm willing to donate my time. Yes, we are a vacation area destination. Right now, we need to bring extra cash to our coffers and get visitors used to the idea of no free parking in Morro Bay. And I want to thank our police department for an amazing job that they did this past Sunday and or Saturday. And thank you for allowing me to speak. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Carol. Zeke, next individual for public comment.
Next speaker, you are on the line. Next speaker, you are on the line.
Hello, this is Dan Southey from Morro Bay. Can you hear me?
Welcome, Dan.
Thank you, Mayor. I too wanted to add my thanks to the entire police force of Morro Bay. I think they have shown extreme professionalism under the guidance of Police Chief Jody Cox, who has extremely professionalized our police force here in Morro Bay to be responsive to the needs of our own community and to that of our nation, as you spoke about, Mayor. Unfortunately, the power went out when you were speaking, Mayor, and I did not get to hear all of your comments, so please forgive me if I repeat anything. But again, I do want to thank all of our police force under the leadership of Chief Jody Cox.
Second, I have a neighborhood situation which has been brought up before by my neighbor, Michelle, and she has children, and she lives next to a smoker's house, and she's brought up this problem of smoke wafting into her yard on a regular basis, and she was told at one point by our city manager to call the code enforcement and that they would handle it. She did do that, and they said we can't do anything until the new smoking ordinance takes effect. So it appears either that they are not aware that they can do something until the smoking ordinance takes effect, or that was incorrect Biden's advisement, and I would like to know how is she supposed to proceed to stop this harmful secondhand smoke proceeding into her yard, driveway, and into her house. That's really disturbing, and she's trying to protect her children and seems to be unable to do so up to this point. She's followed the advice given, and it hasn't provided any relief. Those are my comments. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Dan. Zeke, next individual for public comment.
Mr. Mayor, we don't have anybody else in the queue with their hand up at this moment.
Okay, thank you, Zeke. With that, I will close a general public comment and bring it back to council. A couple of things to address. Perhaps one of our staff members could take the issue of the Quintana South Bay Boulevard question regarding the concrete slab. I don't know if Mr. Leidick is on the line, or Mr. Collins wants to take this.
Sure, Rob Leidick here.
Hi, that Rob. Was, thanks.
You're welcome. That was work performed by one of the contractors on behalf of a fiber utility installing a new fiber line, and it wasn't a concrete slab that was poured. It was concrete. Low-strength concrete backfill, so a slurry mix, which is in our standards to do in lieu of compaction. So you can pour a slurry in the trench backfill that hardens, but not hard enough that you can't dig through it again in lieu of compaction.
Thank you, Mr. Leibick. Very much appreciated.
You're welcome.
And let's see, Mr. Collins and or Chris, our lead counsel, did you want to address the smoking, secondhand smoking issue with regard to the neighbor?
Yeah, I don't know the specifics, the address or anything like that, but we have taken on this before in the past, and folks are allowed to smoke near their homes out as long as they're not near windows and things like that, and it could just be that this is a matter of a neighbor not being neighborly. A lot of times we do have to catch this in the act to be able to issue citations. But if it's an ongoing issue, it's typically referred to the code enforcement. But without knowing specifically what type of arrangement is, I can't comment beyond that. But Scott Graham or Amy or Chris may be able to further elucidate. But without having more details, it's really hard to know exactly what Dan's talking about.
Any other comments from Chris or
this is Chris.
Thanks, Chris.
I concur with everything the city manager had to relate, and in regards to the local code, if smoking cigarettes rises to the level of being a nuisance, then it's prohibited by the local code. I can't speak to whether or not what was described rises to that level, and it's very difficult to reach that level. There is a prohibition on basically creating a nuisance through secondhand smoke. But as the city manager reiterated, it is lawful to smoke cigarettes on private single home residential property. When the new code goes into effect, there will be further prohibitions on multi-unit or multi-tenant dwellings. But single family residential homes, you generally have the right to smoke cigarettes in your home unless it rises to the level of being a nuisance.
Thank you. Appreciate the feedback on that. With that, I think that covers the questions that were asked, and I will move, bring it back for item A, consent agenda. I will go ahead and open up public comment for items on the consent agenda only. Any members of the public wishing to comment on the consent agenda, please raise your hand or follow the directions that will be on the screen for accessing this meeting to make public comments. Thank you. Public comments are open. Zeke, any public members ready for comment?
Yes, sir. Just a moment. Betty Winholtz, you are on the line.
Thank you. Betty Winholtz, thank you. I just want to address A5 and hope that the council will pull that and deal with that later, since the expiration for this particular project has not expired for the appeal yet, and I wouldn't want the council to step in ahead of when they shouldn't. Thank you.
Thank you, Betty. Zeke, do we have other?
Yes, sir. One more. And
okay.
Caller, you are on the line. Caller, you are on the line.
Hello, Mr. Mayor. This is Dan Sedley from Morro Bay.
Yes, welcome, Dan.
I also wanted to address item A5. I consider item A5 to be financially irresponsible of the city, especially during this time that we're in a financial emergency, to be spending $650 million when you read the detail pages, even though it's a 55-year loan that's due in a lump sum payment at that time. We don't know what our financial situation is going to be there to pay $650 million. But at this time, the back detail pages clearly says that we have to pay $100,000 up front to the local school district. Are we going to have to lay more people off or provide higher taxes to provide for that? I don't believe this is something that the people of our city would support, knowing the expense that this would mean to them. And I'm adamantly against it, especially at this time that we are in a financial emergency. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Dan. Zeke, next individual for public comment.
Nobody else in the queue has their hand raised, Mr. Mayor.
All right. Thank you. Then I will close public comment for the consent agenda and bring it back to council. I'll go ahead and pull A5. Are there any other items to pull?
Mayor, I'd like to pull A4 if we could.
A4, sure. Okay. A4 and A5. Any others? Then I'll entertain a motion for approval of A1, 2, 3, 6, and 7.
So moved.
Okay, so motion by Councilmember McPherson to approve A1, 2, 3, 6, and 7, second by Councilmember Addis, and we'll do roll call vote, please.
Thank you, Mayor. And I wanted to comment that I understand Councilmember Davis lost power at his home and... is not in the meeting at the moment. I'm waiting for him to return.
Okay.
But I'll take the vote. Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
Councilmember Addis?
Yes.
Councilmember Davis is absent. Councilmember Heller?
Yes.
I'm present.
Oh, he's back. Wonderful.
And there was a power outage up here in North Morrow.
Okay, thank you. And Mayor Henning?
Yes.
And okay, motion carries 5-0.
Oh, okay. Thank you. So with that, Councilmember Heller, A4, please.
Yeah, so the questions I have here, it notes that the community development director will have authority to address certain issues, and it lists signage, security measures, or record keeping. So Mr. Graham, can you tell me a little bit more about those kinds of issues? Have other cities had these kinds of issues, and could you just describe them for me a little bit? I'm not familiar with this. Are you there?
I'm coming.
Okay.
Mr. Graham, sir, yes.
So, Councilmember Heller, that was the clause in the ordinance, and the clause in the ordinance. And what did it say?
Well, it said possible it would be under your authority to deal with certain issues, and it lists signage, security measures, or record keeping. Can you tell me a little bit about what those issues might, what that little more detail on?
Councilman Heller, I can perhaps address that before Community Development Director does. It was my recommendation to the Cannabis Council Subcommittee to provide for this pursuant to the local code right now. The Cannabis Code provides in Section 150 of the code that either the City Council or if the Community Development Director is authorized, can adopt further rules and regulations for the administration of the chapter. So what this means is that once the business is open, we do have about 20 pages of regulations in the local code. Once the store is open, then there might be the need to refine some of the regulations already on the books, but it wouldn't necessarily rise to the level of needing to do an ordinance amendment. And so this is just for ease of administration. It's not that the community development director can make new rules or regulations. It's to interpret the existing ones. And so the examples that I put in the staff report, record keeping, signage, is that, for example, the stores need to have a sign that you can actually see when you walk into the store with certain information on it. And if there is some dispute over, well, does it have to literally be 2 feet from where you walk in? Does it have to be visible, to someone with normal vision? I mean, we just don't know how these rules or regulations might have some interpretation issues. So that's what this is meant to do. So I hope that explains some of the background on it. And okay. Community Development Director might have some further thoughts. But that was my idea to put this into the ordinance amendment.
Okay, and so what kind of leverage do we have if we have these kinds of issues that we have to deal with?
Well, the city right now has the ability to enforce its Chapter 150, the Cannabis Code, just through the regular, civil and ultimately criminal, authority that it has, just like any other code violation. Typically, if there's an issue with a business, the city will approach them and try to have a meeting to see if they can resolve the issue. Otherwise, the business is issued a notice of violation. And ultimately, if the business doesn't come into compliance, then, the city can keep ratcheting up pressure. But this cannabis code itself is actually designed to have rather strict and swift penalties if there's any health and safety issues, though.
Okay. All right, that answers my question. Thank you very much.
Did you want to move approval of that, Councilmember Heller?
Yeah, we can move approval of A4.
Okay, I'll second that. Any discussion? If not, let's go ahead and take a roll call vote on A4, please.
Councilmember Heller?
Yes.
Mayor Hedding?
Yes.
Councilmember Davis?
Yes.
Councilmember Addis?
I'll abstain.
And Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you. Oh, great. Go ahead and announce it. I'm sorry.
Motion carries 401.
Thank you. That brings us to A5. I pulled A5 because staff has been presented with an issue concerning this item. In essence, because the appeal period with regard to the Planning Commission's recommendation is still running, there would be nothing illegal tonight about considering this item. However, I think from a transparency standpoint, it would be better to postpone this until the 6:23 meeting, and that would allow the appeal period to run its course. And if there are appeals, they would be considered prior to any consideration. So I'm moving that we table this until 6:23 meeting.
Second.
Okay. So motion.
May I ask a question, Mr. Mayor?
Yeah. Let me just clarify the motion.
I'm sorry.
Motion by myself to table this to 6:23 meeting, seconded by Council Member, I think it was McPherson. Go ahead, Councilmember Heller.
So the 6/23 meeting, this would come back to us, and also would we be looking at the project itself? It seems kind of odd to me that we're looking at this and we haven't seen the project.
Mr. Graham, you want to comment?
Certainly no. The project wouldn't be coming before the city council unless it came down on appeal.
Oh, I see.
It's been approved by the Planning Commission.
No, I understand that, but I thought okay, so it's got to be appealed before it comes. Okay. Gotcha. Right. Okay.
Okay.
That's my question.
Mr. Mayor, if I can clarify, to just be clear, if an appeal is filed, it's highly unlikely that the appeal would be resolved before 6/23.
Right.
And so the intent in moving this item to 6/23 is that if an appeal is filed, potentially the issues could be addressed or resolved. But to be clear, under the code, the appeal process is up to 60 days, and the actual loan documents and the processing from the state of California and the county anticipate that there very well could be an appeal after loans are approved, and they provide jurisdictions up to 30 days to take care of that. But I didn't want there to be any misunderstanding that if appeal was filed and it wasn't resolved by 6/23, that doesn't mean that we wouldn't bring this item back then.
Thank you for that clarification, Chris. I appreciate that. With that, we have a motion for approval, to move item A5 to the 6/23 meeting and a second. Roll call vote, please.
Mayor Heading?
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
Addis?
Yes.
Councilmember Davis?
Yes.
And Councilmember Heller?
Yes.
Question carries 5-0.
Thank you. That moves us to item B. This, by the way, is a business item. It is not a public hearing, FYI. This is the introduction and first reading of ordinance number 634. Amendments to Morro Bay Municipal Code for sidewalk vending permit requirements, and I will turn it over to Mr. Graham, please.
Thank you, Mayor Heading. I'm going to share my screen here. I have a brief PowerPoint presentation. Okay, we can get back to the beginning of it. All right, there we go. Okay, so the item before you is the introduction and first reading of Ordinance 634. It's for sidewalk vending permit requirements. This ordinance implements Senate Bill 946, the purpose of which was to protect vulnerable populations by decriminalizing street vending and to allow cities to develop permitting programs to implement the bill. General overview of the ordinance, SB 946 came into effect in January of 2019, so it's been in place a little over 18 months. Bill has local authority that allows them to adopt regulations to govern sidewalk vending. Allows local authorities to establish requirements that regulate the time, place, and manner of sidewalk vending. If the requirements are directly related to objective health, safety, and welfare concerns, and we have findings in the ordinance that reflect those because we have put in regulations that relate to those items. Some of the summary items that are in the ordinance. Requires an annual permit fee, includes requirements for both stationary and roaming vendors. That's kind of what you see in the picture on the slide. You have a roaming one moving by, one at a fixed location. It would apply to folks, you know, selling merchandise, retail goods, food, beverages, and would be used from either non-motorized carts or from a stationary sales type stand. And these would be allowed to operate in the public right-of-way, in public parks, and in other public areas. Some of the operational restrictions that we put in place in the ordinance deal with limitations in our high traffic areas, like say down on the Embarcadero, as shown in the picture there. We have narrow sidewalks and often would be inappropriate to put stationary vendors on those sidewalks with the high volume of traffic that we have during the peak season. Prohibits or limits sidewalk vendors in certain locations around parks and beaches and public parking lots. Prohibits stationary sidewalk vendors from our residential areas because we have either no sidewalks or narrow sidewalks in those areas. Requires applicants for these types of permits, if they want to locate on state highway property or state right-of-way, to gain authorization from the state of California for that. And then prohibits these types of uses on pedestrian, bicycle, and trails and pathways. So it wouldn't be allowed, say, like on the Harbor Walk as an example. Some of the items that would be they're required to submit as part of their application that we would review and permit on would be items related to cart size. They're allowed to have carts with a maximum of 5 feet in length and 3 feet in width and 6 feet in height. They're required to have trash facilities as part of their vending cart or standard or standalone location. They're not allowed to use city trash receptacles for disposal of their trash. They're also required to keep the area in and around the cart clean. They're required to submit the items for sale to the city, and that becomes part of their permit. Those are the only items that they're allowed to sell. There's items that relate to business conduct, meaning it prohibits them from going door to door and trying to sell items. Also prohibits them from going, you know, business to business to try to sell items. There's a fire safety review by our fire department if they have cooking facilities in the cart. We have requirements that the carts be visible for safety purposes because they can't operate, you know, before light and after dark. So that's important. And then we do take a look at the areas where they're proposing to operate to make sure they're appropriate, and they have to give us a map of those areas, and that becomes part of the permit. So in conclusion, the sidewalk vendor ordinance is necessary for us to implement SB 946. This has been in place, again, since 2019. So putting the ordinance in place allows us to place greater restrictions on these types of uses than would otherwise be allowed by the Senate bill. And it is staff recommendation that council introduced for first reading by number and title only, with further reading waived. Ordinance number 634, amending Title 5 of the Morway Municipal Code, adding Chapter 5.60 for sidewalk vendors, and amending Chapter 5.08, Chapter 5.40, and Chapter 10.40. And we're amending those chapters to bring them into consistency with the new sidewalk vending ordinance. With that, staff would be happy to answer any questions if you have them.
Thank you, Mr. Graham. Appreciate that very much. With that, I'll go ahead and open it up for council questions. Councilmember McPherson, would you like to lead us off? Any questions?
I do have some. Thank you. And
thank you.
I appreciate Scott actually did answer some questions that I sent to him ahead of time, so I will not try to repeat those, but I have some others. So can I first ask... explain exactly why the major purpose is really to bring us into conformance with state law, correct? So why is it coming to us now at this point in time?
Well, we've been working on this for a while in concert with the city attorney's office. Obviously, with COVID-19 hitting and several other initiatives the city's had going, it's you know, from a priority standpoint, it had been backburned for a little while. But we do need to get it in place, and we're trying to bring it forward to have it in place for summer. We're a little bit late on that because of COVID, but we're trying to do it now. We're not getting a lot of activity as it relates to these. We've had a handful of inquiries since it became law, and we've actually permitted one down by the Rock. But I can see, you know, with the peak season on us now, and that car were to start operating, others were to see it. I could see us getting more, you know, inquiries about these types of uses. And so we wanted to get the ordinance put in place so we had the clear restrictions that are in it versus what would otherwise be allowed by just the language of the Senate bill.
So at this point in time, they are legal in Morro Bay, and they could apply for a permit, and we could have more. Is that correct?
That is correct.
So what we're really doing here is trying to put some more restrictions on the process and who can apply and how many there can be, and really for health and safety reasons. That's the primary purpose of why we're doing this, correct?
It's codifying the Senate bill and then tailoring it to, you know, Morro Bay's needs. And we have the ability through the Senate bill to do that. And so it takes the form of some greater restrictions in certain areas where you wouldn't really want to have a proliferation of these types of things, say the Embarcadero, you know, during the peak of summer.
Okay. And I will ask you again how you figured out how many should be allowed in each location.
Internally met. The planner that worked on this was Nancy Hubbard. We worked with Chris and our assistant city attorney, Brian, on working through these. Internally, we met as a planning staff and looked at the locations. And we wanted to make sure that we weren't going to have, again, over proliferation of these. And so we provided limits in these that seemed like if they were all maxed out, they could meet them and they could still operate in an acceptable manner. Not that we expect that to be the case, but that is kind of how we did it.
Okay. And has there been interest from existing businesses to actually augment their sales with sort of these sidewalk vendors, or are these mostly just sort of independent operators that have shown some interest?
I am not aware of us receiving any inquiries from existing businesses in town. Most of the ones, and again, we've only had a handful, have come from, you know, folks that wanted to establish this type of business from outside the area.
Okay. And will they be then competing with our existing businesses?
Well, insofar as they could sell, you know, retail merchandise that are in the existing stores in town, or they could sell food products that are in our existing stores in town, sure.
Okay. All right. I think the only other question I think I would also ask you again is concerns fishermen selling fish off the dock or on their boat. Is that something that would require this kind of a permit?
No, that's a separate process, and they're allowed to do that. I think we did that by resolution several years ago. And, you know, so it's not covered underneath this. Certainly, I guess a fisherman could do this and could come in and get a permit to go, you know, get a cart and sell fish and walk around town. Certainly, that could happen. But that's not what the intent of the ordinance is for.
Okay. All right. I think those are all my questions. Thank you.
Great. Thank you so much. Councilmember Davis, any questions?
Yes, I do have one question. We have talked to our harbor department about licensing certain activities in public areas, such as paddleboard rentals and lessons and even public weddings. And I wonder if this ordinance has any effect on that kind of activity.
It purposefully does not. Those are covered under separate processes the city has. This was really just limiting it. It actually prohibits renting items from carts, just so we're not getting into those types of areas like renting paddleboards or kayaks or things like that. Because, again, we do have other processes that we follow for those types of things.
Okay, that's all my questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Heller, any questions, sir?
Yes. So, Mr. Graham, so did you draft this ordinance based on one from another city, or did you just compile a bunch of stuff? I mean, what was your process in developing this?
We took a look at ordinances from several other cities and kind of used the best pieces out of those that we saw, put it together, and then had the city attorney's office look at it. They went through a pretty significant editing session on it, and it produced what you see today.
Okay. And then was there any thought given to kind of selecting the kinds of things that could be sold so you don't end up issuing licenses for 5 cotton candy sellers or something to that effect?
It's not something that we talked about, you know, having a number of certain types of sales that you could have. I actually have to do a review of the Senate bill to see if we could even do that. But it's not something that, you know, that we ever, you know, discussed at any length.
Okay. Those are my questions. Thank you.
Great, thank you. Councilmember Addis, questions?
Those were both of my questions that Councilmember Davis asked, is if this would allow the paddleboarding and other kinds of things that we already have on the Embarcadero, and that Councilmember Heller asked of kind of what we're going to see and how many of each of those are we going to see down there. So that, I think that that covered all of the questions that I really had about this.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Scott, for the presentation. Very much appreciated. Just a couple of questions. Could you describe the mechanism for these kinds of vendors to report and remit sales tax?
They'd likely be covered under our minimum business license requirements. They're not going to be generating substantial sales, so they would probably be one of our the minimum business license fee. That's what they'd be charged.
So, but they do, would have to report to CDTA any sales and sales tax collected.
Correct, and they need to indicate the amount of sales generated to the city as part of their business license application as well.
Okay, I was just looking to make sure that the city would be able to capture sales tax revenue from these vendors, and that they were under the same reporting requirements that regular non-street vendors were under. So, for any vendors that might take up residence intermittently on the Embarcadero, obviously they're not leasing space, and they, I assume, and I guess the question is, that they're not going to be subject to any of the requirements for percent sales payment to the city, and they wouldn't have to enter into a separate agreement for that with the city?
That is the case now. We had that conversation, a pretty lengthy one on that. City Attorney's Office reviewed it. The conclusion was that probably isn't consistent with the Senate bill as it's written. So, that wouldn't be something that would be happening as part of these. They were located down on the waterfront. That's correct.
Okay. And then again, how many do you think you have pending in the queue, or with the approval of this, are we going to expect an onslaught of these types of vendors coming into the city? And just trying to get a sense of volume.
No, I mean, like I said, people, they could have submitted applications for these types of uses already. They were allowed, starting in 2019. So we've had, again, just a handful of inquiries, and we've had one that's gone through the entire permitting process and is currently permitted. We don't have a bunch of pending applications, and we certainly don't have even very many inquiries. Honestly, like when I say a handful, like I think it's less than half a dozen inquiries that we receive.
Okay. Well, that's all the questions I have. With that, I'll go ahead and open up public comment. Zeke, do we have anybody in the queue for public comment on item B1?
No, sir, Mr. Mayor, there is nobody. Oh, there is just one person. Just, yep, here they come. And we will allow the first person. Eric, you're on the line. Erica, you are on the line.
Hi there. Thank you. This is Erica Crawford with the Morro Bay Chamber of Commerce. Good evening.
Welcome, Erica.
Hi. Good evening, Honorable Mayor and Council. Thank you for considering the item. I do understand that sidewalk vending availability has come down to the community as a state requirement via Senate bill. Given the economic crisis created by the pandemic, would council or staff consider waiving the fee for this vending permit for businesses with brick-and-mortar establishments in Morro Bay, or consider setting up a local preference for the program that would allow these local businesses to expand through this opportunity? Thank you.
Thank you. Zeke, any other public comments?
Just a minute, Mayor.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Weiss, you are on the line.
Thank you, Honorable Mayor and Council and citizens. This is an issue that I would support. I know that there are some restaurants that are interested and are supportive of this measure. And I think that obviously there's pros and cons to it. I like the idea that you have the requirement that trash requirements be provided, because that is a constant issue. You know, that's something that's dear to my heart, and it's something that I feel that, you know, we need to try to keep clean in Morro Bay for our visitors and for our residents and citizens. So I would support this measure, and hope that you would pass it. As far as waiving fees, I would waive fees for those who have brick and mortar businesses. I don't know that I would waive fees for those who have no rent, if you will, that they pay in Morro Bay. I think that's maybe more generous than I would be, but that's just an opinion on my part. But I think that it's a good thing to do, and I appreciate that you have offered this opportunity for me to speak publicly on this item. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Zeke. Any next caller or next public comment?
Next caller, you are on the line.
Hello, Mr. Mayor. This is Dan Sedley from Morro Bay.
Welcome, Dan.
Thank you, sir. Looking at page number 3 of the report on B1, towards the top of the graph, it talks about Embarcadero. And I thought, in listening to Mr. Graham, he said that we would eliminate the Embarcadero from these sidewalk vendors, but it clearly says limited opportunity area on all the Embarcadero sites. And I would be vehemently opposed on having the sidewalk vendors on the Embarcadero. Those of you that have toured, driven down the Embarcadero on weekends know that it's wall-to-wall people/humanity. Putting a 3x5 table, a chair, a trash can, and all of that, even on a 10-foot slab, just compacts people like there's no tomorrow, and increases the possibility of COVID transmission, which should be considered in this factor. So it's my position that sidewalk cells be eliminated from the Embarcadero. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Dan. Zeke, next individual for public comment.
Carol, you're on the line.
Thank you so much again, council members. This is Carol Truesdale again.
Welcome, Carol.
I think the idea of the parklets were supposed to expand the existing restaurants to allow for, if they have pickup and delivery or pickup at their restaurant, for families kind of walk down, and because of limited space inside their existing edifice. So I think we need to really think about that to make it sure that it's only for the existing restaurants on our areas here to help our existing restaurateurs to get back on an even keel. I don't think we should have a Barker kind of thing, got T-shirts here, T-shirts there. I think it's best that we only focus on those businesses that are geared towards Morro Bay. Thank you. I'm done.
Thank you, Carol.
Okay.
Go ahead, Zeke. Next individual.
Mayor, there is nobody else in the queue with their hand up.
Okay. Thank you. With that, I will close public comment on item B-1. Just a couple of questions, Mr. Graham. Do we have the authority under SB, 946, to limit further the areas that you've outlined on page 3?
If there's a direct correlation to impacts to health, life, and safety, yes.
And that would have to be stated as to those impacts and what they would be?
Correct. I would add, in addressing some of the comments that were made, that yes, they're allowed down on the Embarcadero on a limited basis, but it wouldn't be on sidewalks. We'd be permitting them in areas like the Centennial Stairway area by the chessboard or something like that. Something because there's some bike racks there, kind of a large concrete pad where the, we've had, things set up in the past there. They could, one could locate there as an example of some place that's off the sidewalk.
And then my assumption regarding Ms. Truesdale's comments with regard to the expansion of existing restaurants, really that will be considered as a separate item, C2, tonight. That would be incorporated under that, correct?
Part of the discussion deals with that, yes.
And the last question that I'll ask with regard to public comment is, can the city limit these vendors to only existing vendors in town? For instance, the expansion of a retail unit that may want to put up its own street vendor unit.
Can we limit it? Can we limit the ones in the city to just our existing businesses?
Right. There was public comment requesting that maybe we consider that. My question is that legal to consider?
I think
can we exclude individuals that do not own businesses from putting up, let's say, carts or street vendor units if they do not own a business in town?
Given that gets into the legal realm of things, I think I'll call a friend. Mr. Niemeyer might want to answer that.
Mr. Mayor, under the Senate bill that was passed, I don't see any way the city could do that and still be in compliance with the Senate bill. I think the global context to remember here is that this Senate bill, starting in January 2019, basically prohibits cities from criminalizing all street vending and then allows cities to place some limits on them. But basically, this was Sacramento's decision that cities that had prohibited street vendors and sidewalk vendors can't do that anymore. And that if there's going to be regulations on them, there have to be, you know, health and safety reasons. So with that context, I don't see the Senate bill in any way allowing the city to limit the sidewalk vending to just local businesses. Outside of the Senate bill, I think that we'd run clearly into federal constitutional issues as well. In terms of this would be a restraint on business, it would just not only be a local preference, it would be a local exclusionary act. You know, we can't just say folks from out of town can't do business in Morro Bay. That's a federal and state constitutional issue. So the answer is no, I don't think that would be legal.
I didn't think so, Chris, but I did want to clarify it for the caller that made the comment. Thank you for that. With that, I'll bring it back to council and either entertain a motion, which would include discussion, or we can move directly to discussion. Is there anybody interested in moving the item?
I'll move the item.
Second.
Motion by Council Member Addis to introduce for first reading by number and title only, with further reading waived, Ordinance Number 634, amending Title 5 of the Morro Bay Municipal Code, adding Chapter 5.60, Sidewalk Vendors, and amending the Chapters 5.08.150A, 1, 5.40.020, and 10.40.120 to regulate sidewalk vendors within the city of Morro Bay. And I believe I heard a second by Councilmember Heller.
Yes.
Great. Okay. So we have a motion and a second. Any discussion?
I just had one quick question.
Sure.
I don't know if I heard correctly, but would we be able to use the fee structure to support local businesses? Or is that not allowed either?
You mean have a local preference, meaning the concept that we were going to be waiving, we could waive fees for our local folks, but charge the fee for folks that were out of the area?
Or lower fees for local business. I mean, I don't know if it has to be waived, but I guess I'm just looking for a way that if, you know, the state has told us we have to do this, and so we're trying to do it in a way that's going to be best for Morro Bay. And is there a way, if we can't do it other ways, can we use the fee structure, such as was, I believe, was just, if I heard correctly, was just in, suggested by the chamber. So is that a possibility that we could look at? And if so, would we need council action, or what would we need?
I'm not sure we can charge different fees for the businesses. Maybe Mr. Niemeyer might have a thought on that. I'm not sure if we can do that or not.
At best, it would be very difficult to justify. I'm not saying it's impossible, but even if we were to have pages and pages of findings to justify it, I think it would still be subject to challenge.
I'm thinking of like, you know, when, and I know paid parking is totally separate, but like in those situations, often there is like, you know, a neighborhood permit that is, you know, allows people to do things within a certain area, or if it's a, you know, an existing business that is now trying to have outside vending because of COVID and, you know, social distancing, like, is there, are there any ways to move something like that forward that we could be creative?
It could be reviewed more. You know, as I said, I don't want to conclusively say we can't do that. I think that it would have to be very well crafted to prevent challenge for essentially discriminating against businesses that are over the border. There's a difference between allowing residents to have preference for local parking and allowing local businesses to basically get a leg up in economic competition, just in terms of the way the law looks at preferences. So if council directed my office or city staff to review this more, we certainly could look at it, but I would hesitate to say that, you know, it would be simple.
Thank you. That's all from me.
Okay. Thank you for the question. We do have a motion by Councilmember Addis, second by Councilmember Heller, for the recommendation from staff. Any further discussion?
I would just like to ask Scott Graham to remind us of what that annual fee is. As I recall, it's just a little over $200, but I just want to confirm that. So it's not a significant amount of money. Is that correct?
Yeah, we'd be bringing it back probably at the next council meeting to put it on the fee schedule, and I think it was $325 starting at the beginning of next fiscal year.
Oh, at the beginning of next fiscal year, because I thought I saw...
July 1, so, sorry.
I thought I saw some 200-something, but whatever. That it's still a fairly small amount of money for the permit, so thank you for that. I support it.
And to be clear, Councilmember McPherson, you know, these fees are not revenue generating. They're to simply recoup the cost of the city administering the program.
Right. No, I understand that. So thank you.
Okay.
I support the motion.
Okay. Any other comments? If not, roll call vote, please.
Councilmember Addis.
Yes.
Councilmember Heller?
Yes.
Councilmember Davis?
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
Mayor Heading?
Yes.
Motion carries 5-0.
Thank you. That completes item B1. We'll move to our business items. C-1, consideration of the Morro Bay Tourism Business Improvement District, or TBID's annual report and continuation of the TBID assessment for fiscal year 2020-2021. Adoption of resolution number 47-20, declaring the intent to continue the program and levy assessments for the fiscal year 2020-2021, and scheduling a public hearing to levy the assessment. I will turn it over to Mr. Collins, sir.
Thank you, Mayor, council members, community members participating or viewing online. The recommendation for council is to approve fiscal year 2020-2021 TBID, or Tourism Business Improvement District annual report for expenditure of funds to be derived from the annual assessment, and adopt resolution number 4720 declaring the intent to continue the program and levy the 3% TBID assessments for this fiscal year upcoming 2020 and 21, and schedule a public hearing to levy the assessments for the public hearing to take place at the next council meeting on June 23rd. This is a upcoming year and current year like no other for our tourism and really for the entire city operations, but particularly true for tourism in many respects. The first is that COVID has put a halt to, at least in the beginnings, put a halt to all, pretty much all tourism and lodging and related industries as a result of trying to flatten the curve. And
looking into next year, we project that there will be a very slow recovery, at least nationally in regards to tourism. And then on the other flip side of that is we are really not allowed to market, which is what your tourism dollars typically do. We are in the business of encouraging people to come, particularly trying to get folks to come on our shoulder seasons, because we do have, we know we have the peak tourist season during the middle of summer. And we put those action items into place to help kind of smooth out the year. But COVID has thrown everything a big wrench into our plans. And we really have to think about applying flexibility and adaptability moving into next year. So that is sort of what colors everything regarding our plan for fiscal year 2020-2021. As noted, we are recommending we continue with the 3% assessment. That is a 3% assessment on all overnight stays for hotels, motels, and just recently added last year vacation rentals. Typically, that would generate close to $900,000 a year. But based on our models that we're running for our general fund and looking at what's available, both with our partners regionally and also nationally, we're anticipating at least a 30% decline in transit occupancy tax. And we use that to help determine what we expect for our TBID revenues, because they're pretty much interlocked. So we're projecting about $550,000 as opposed to a typical $800,000 to $900,000 yearly assessment. So that is a big determinant of how we move forward, knowing that we are going to have a much smaller base to work from in which to market. Plus, understanding that right now we really can't market, and when we're allowed to, we don't know if it makes sense to do so, and we don't know how people are going to react to kind of the continual reopening, based on the fact that we still have almost a 16 or 17% unemployment rate in the country. So a lot of folks are not operating with the same level of discretionary income they had prior to COVID-19. So with all that in mind, and knowing that we're just a few months into this and flying a bit blind, because there isn't anything in recent history to look back to, we anticipate the budget for next year will be very fluid, and that we need to do in-depth checks and reviews with both the TBID, the board that oversees this, as well as City Council. There is no general fund supporting tourism like there has been in the past, and that's a function of the general fund facing a deficit of up to 30% for revenues for next year. Just a quick background, TBID was established in 2009 by council with the overall goal of promoting tourism for our destination. There's a bunch of background information that talks about how hotels and vacation rentals are defined, so I won't get into that. But I do want to flag this by sharing my screen. Hopefully that's something I can do without screwing it up. Let's see. Okay. So this is page, I want to make sure I get this right, page 90 of 148. What is before you, these six items, is which defines kind of the business improvement district. These six characteristics are outlined in state highways code, streets and highways code section 3653. In essence, it defines the boundaries, and it defines the activities that will take place within that boundary, or the improvements that will take place, the amount it will cost to provide those improvements or activities, the method and basis of levying the assessment, the amount of surplus or deficit revenues to be carried forward, and the amount of contributions from other sources to the assessment. So that gives you sort of a background, high level of how we get to where we are and move forward with the assessment and the TBID. So I will back out of this real quick. So looking into next year, as I mentioned, the budget is a lot different than previous years because of COVID. We are particularly making significant changes under the salaries and benefits line item for TBID. As council's aware, we did have two part-time employees and a full-time tourism manager position to help oversee the functions of the tourism department. And they worked, you know, hand in hand with the agency of record, Mental Marketing, who did a lot of the marketing on our behalf, both on ad placement, like the traditional ad placement, working with traveling journalists and doing social media for us. But the tourism manager played a very important role in helping to set strategy and coordinating with stakeholders, both at the local level and regional level, and with our partners at Visit California, the statewide tourism management district for all of California. Unfortunately, because of where we're at with our budget and being down significantly and not being able to market at this time, we did eliminate funding for the tourism manager position for fiscal year 2021, which was not an easy decision to make. As we know, Jen Little has been a very good tourism manager and has done a lot of great work to help guide us into a new era with tourism and implementing the strategic plan. But we do need all the flexibility we can have moving into next year, not knowing when we'll be allowed to market and ultimately when it will make sense to market, because it could be that there is significant pent-up demand and folks will come and we don't really need to market. We need to really think strategically about the long term and how best to position ourselves for next year. That could be the tack to take. The budget is included as an attachment, so I won't go into that by line item, but again, I just wanted to note the big change is really in the staffing model. So at this time, we'll be moving forward with one part-time staffer to help with some administrative duties. There's other notable budget items is the overhead charge of 2%, which is very low. That's to support the work that we do on the internal side with the general fund operations, but that is a significant drawdown of what you would normally expect. With the withholding the funding for the position, we will have about $165,000 estimated that we can bank for next year and make really strategic and targeted investments when it makes sense to do so. So that is sort of, again, the goal is to be flexible and to be very methodical in our uses of funds. And by holding that position back, that gives us the opportunity to do so. And with that in mind, given that we're in this new era, if you will, everything sort of fluid, I think it makes sense to really work with our stakeholders and try to gain consensus about how to move forward, what's the best method to move forward, and that would include working with our hoteliers and vacation rental owners, as well as the TBID advisory board and local and regional stakeholders to determine when and how best to move forward. The TBID advisory board reviewed the budget twice during the month of May. At their May 28th meeting, they did ultimately recommend moving forward with the assessment. It was not a unanimous vote. I do believe there was concern about maintaining flexibility with staffing and being concerned that we would be a boat adrift without our tourism manager. And I definitely understand that perspective. I am not a marketing person. That's not what I came into the job to do. So really my task is to move quickly to do an assessment about how best to move forward with working with folks who know what they're doing in this field, and including people who are benefited from the marketing work that we do, and then come back and make some decisions alongside TBID and City Council about how best to move forward with regard to organization, staffing, structure, and direction of tourism moving forward. So the TBID assessment is a very critical source of revenue to help market our destination. However, we are in a very new and interesting world where we're not allowed to market. We have shrinking revenues to contend with, and we really need to be flexible and light-footed and think long-term about how best to move forward. So with that, I'll be happy to answer any questions that council has.
Thank you, Scott. I appreciate the presentation. Maybe I could start with just a couple of questions. You indicated the TBID board, it was not a unanimous vote. What was the vote?
It was a 3-2, two members absent. Actually, I think one member is moved on from TBID because they were accepted, and I think they got residency, so had to vacate the position, I believe, and then the other individuals was absent. And again, I think there's a general support for the assessment. It's not what the issue was. It was really just about direction and how best to ensure that, again, we're not a boat adrift at sea. And as I explained to the members that really this is our opportunity to do some hard thinking about how best to move forward, because we can't utilize our funds at this time, really. So there isn't work to be done at this point. And so it makes it, again, hard to sort of justify all those staff expenses when we can't do the job that, you know, really hired to do. So it is a unique position to be in. I think they understand that. Again, some question if that's the right direction to go.
Great. And on page 91, under the TBIT Advisory Board review, you did briefly mention the establishment of a stakeholder group, and you say soon to develop recommendations. Can you give me a sense of what you think the timeline is, and what disciplines you're thinking about, or is that something that you're going to work with the TBID to kind of unpack, so to speak?
Yeah, I got some input from TBID, and they also have a meeting next week, so I'll make sure to check in with them on that. But I foresee a couple members from TBID, a couple of hoteliers, vacation rentals, and potentially some other disciplines, like somebody from Visit SloCal, who's our regional partner, and maybe a retailer or a restaurant tour here or there. I don't want to have a very large group, because it's hard to kick around ideas once you become too big, but I want to make sure it's diverse and well representative of the various groups that factor into this. And I would like to do that as early as next week, start this work.
Good, okay. And then have there been any discussion at either the teacher's level or with staff about potentially, and I'll just throw it out, the idea of contracting with SloCal, possibly, and is that something that you might be looking at in your process?
Yes, good question, Mayor. I don't know if that's a possibility, but I think that's sort of the realm of thinking is to be big and think boldly. And if that's something that is brought forward by the group and there's a consensus around that, it would certainly be something to consider. This time, I'm not sure if they could do that, because they do have to maintain neutrality with all the various jurisdictions that they work with, but that's something they certainly ask.
Okay, great. Thank you. That's all the questions I had. I'll open it up for other council member questions. Council member Davis, sir, do you have questions?
No, sir, I do not have any questions.
Thank you, sir. Council member Addis, questions?
I do not have any questions, but I do want to appreciate the challenges here, and I want to appreciate the challenges to the TBID and to the city manager and just all kinds of things that are happening now, and say thank you so much for making these incredibly challenging, incredibly difficult decisions.
Thank you. And Council Member Heller, questions?
Yes. The question I have, I've kind of lost track of what phase we're in at this point as things are moving quickly. So do you have a sense, or can you fill me in on when do you think we will be able to market? Is that part of phase three, or how close are we to that milestone?
Great question, Councilmember Heller. I don't have the crystal ball out on my desk, but I think it would probably be within the next couple weeks, maybe sooner, or maybe a month. That's a hard one to grasp, because the shelter and home order is still in place, and if you look at it, it's saying, you know, stay home except for, and I think it's like this would be, you know, the tourist travel would sort of be the last thing that the state would release, but it's hard to know for sure. So it could be within the next couple of weeks or so. And then the other kind of add-on question is, when does it make sense to market? Because I think there is, and I've heard from industry experts, that there is a lot of pent-up demand for travel. Mm-hmm. And obviously we've seen that occur here on the weekends. And with folks, rightly or wrongly, fearing air travel, drive destinations will be kind of where it's at, for at least this summer, potentially into the future. As people sort of say, you know, I'm not going to get on an airplane unless I absolutely have to. That certainly benefits drive destinations like Morro Bay. So it may be that with the pent-up demand and that and the other component of day trips, or driving trips, that we don't really need to do a ton of work right away and really starting to think about the building blocks once COVID has sort of moved on.
Well, that's a great question. I'm glad your group is addressing it. Do you think within a few weeks that you'll have some recommendations regarding that question? Or
I hope so. If we get a good group together and facilitate it well, I think a couple of weeks is probably realistic as long as the folks' schedule aligns with that. So this isn't something where we're going to solve all the problems in the world. This is more of a targeted focused look. So I'm hoping 2 to 3 weeks would be sufficient.
Well, I like your approach very much, and carry on.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you. Councilmember McPherson, questions?
Cool. Thank you. I actually just have a couple. Just remind me, Scott, we do have a reserve fund for TBID monies, do we not?
Correct. It's called the accumulation fund, and that's when we have end of year, if there's any extra money, it's pulled into the accumulation fund. And council did approve policies, I believe, last year with all of our funds that we were trying to target approximately around the 25% reserve level, which, you know, I think we've been pretty close to. But with COVID hitting in the month of March, we know that occupancy rates were about 31% when you're typically seeing 50 or 60. And then April, I think, was 16% occupancy in our hotels. We know we're going to come up short this fiscal year that we're in, 19 and 20. Right. And so we just don't know how far behind we'll be and how much we'd have to draw down from that reserve.
Okay, but we probably will have to.
Yeah, we don't have that. Really, May will be the defining moment. We won't know month of May numbers until mid-July. That's just it. It's reporting is 30 days plus 10 after.
Right. Okay. Thank you. And I guess the question I have for you is, are you going to be able to take on this additional responsibility over and above everything else you're already doing?
Sure. I think that the real responsibility is trying to figure out our path forward, and I'm that's my job, and I look forward to that challenge. But again, I just want to acknowledge it's hard, and especially knowing how good a manager we had with Jen Little, it makes it challenging. But she's been phenomenal and has stayed on since the notice has been given. In fact, has pulled together a really good plan for TBID to consider next week. So I think that'll be very helpful in the discussions with the stakeholder group as well.
Okay, thank you. That's it for me.
Okay, thank you. With that, I'll go ahead and open up public comment for item C-1. Zeke, do we have public comment?
Yes, sir. Just a minute. I'll bring the first caller up.
Thank you.
Caller, you are on the line.
Hello, Mr. Mayor. This is Dan Chubby from Morro Bay.
Welcome, Dan.
Thank you, sir. I'm confused, and so I will ask a question or two if I could, please. Most recently, Penny Borenstein, our county health director, has opened hoteliers and short-term vacation rentals to full occupancy, citing low infection rates in San Luis Obispo County. That being the case, is Morro Bay still discouraging visitors to Morro Bay, given that there's low infection rates in our county? And if Morro Bay is still doing that, why is that the case when Dr. Borenstein has said it's fully okay to fully inhabit all hotel and short-term vacation rental environments? That's my question.
Thank you, Dan. Zeke, next caller.
Yes, sir. We don't have anybody else in the queue with their hand raised.
Okay. I will close public comment on item C-1 and bring it back. To answer Mr. Sedley's question, approximately 2.5 weeks ago, the county placed a restriction on occupancy in the county, limiting it to 50% for hotels, motels, vacation rentals, et cetera. That order was lifted in terms of that restriction this past week, just beginning actually this week. And the state, under the governor's guidance, still is actually under the order for stay at home. And only essential travel is, quote unquote, allowed. What the public health director in San Luis Obispo County did was to lift basically the restriction, but certainly not open up any marketing to the area or encourage tourism to the area, even though, quote unquote, we have pretty much flattened the curve. And so we remain under the state order, and until that is lifted, the hotels, motels, et cetera, are supposed to be limited only to essential travel occupancy. So with that, I will bring it back to council and either entertain a motion, or if you'd like to have discussion first, we can do that.
I'll move.
Okay. Staff recommendation?
Yes, I'll move the staff recommendation.
I'll second.
So a motion by Councilmember Addis to approve the fiscal year 2021 TBID annual report for expenditure of funds to be derived from the annual assessment and adopt resolution number 47-20, declaring the intent to continue the program and levy the 3% TBID assessments for fiscal year 2021 and schedule a public hearing to levy the assessments, and a second by Councilmember Heller.
Mr. Mayor, could you add June 23rd as the date for the public hearing? I'm sorry, I didn't call that out.
Yes, I'm sorry. And if Councilmember Addis will allow us to add 6/23 for the public hearing?
Yes.
And Councilmember Heller, you're okay with the second on that?
Yes.
Right. So we will add that. Thank you, Scott. And is there any further discussion on the motion?
I would just like to add, I'm certainly in favor of the approach that's being taken here, and I'm glad that the city manager has stepped up and proposed it. I just would like to make sure that in the goals and objectives for next year, which are stated in here, we need to add something related to vacation, short-term vacation rentals. And there is nothing that talks about it currently. So I hope that when this comes back at the public hearing, there's some mention of the short-term vacation rentals, which are now part of the TBID.
Yes. Thank you, Councilman McPherson. We can do that simply under the goals and objectives, which is in the quote-unquote annual report, and just add where it says hotels and motels, we can just add and vacation rentals.
That would work. That would work, but it might also work if you mention that we're really trying to incorporate them in this coming year, because it'll be their first year in.
Yes, can do that easily, and I don't know if that needs to be added to the motion, but that's easily done, and it makes sense. It was from last year, so we did add them, but we're still working to integrate.
Right. Okay. I don't think it needs to be part of the motion. I think it just needs to come. When it comes back to us, it'll be in there.
Sounds good.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other comments? My comment would be, again, Scott, thank you for the work. I also wanted to thank Jen Little and the other staff members for their great work that they've done in the past. And I know it was a very difficult decision to make. Tourism is the economic engine of the city, and I understand that without the ability to market, that cuts needed to be made, and those tough decisions were made. But our thanks as a council go out to them for the great work that they've done. Also, I think it'd be very important to bring back as quickly as possible the recommendations from the stakeholders. My sense is we're headed towards a reopening of other than essential worker travel sooner than later. And so I think you sense the urgency of convening the stakeholder group and bringing that back. We need, in my opinion, to be ready to market. We're a single engine economy. Tourism is it. And when the floodgates open, there may be a pent up demand that will come. But then the resumption of marketing full bore I believe we need to be ready for. So I choose support the motion, and with that, we'll ask for a roll call vote.
Councilmember Addis.
Yes.
Councilmember Heller.
Yes.
Councilmember Davis.
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson.
Yes.
And Mayor Heading.
Yes.
Motion carries 5-0.
Thank you again. And that now brings us to item C-2, adoption of resolution 48-20, approving temporary outdoor dining sales program and expansion of the city's blanket encroachment permit program, use of city right-of-way and other private outdoor space to facilitate social distancing and support COVID-19 economic recovery. And with that, I'll turn it over to Mr. Graham again. Thank you, Scott.
Thank you, Mayor Eddy. Members of Council, I have a brief PowerPoint presentation I'm going to share with you. Hopefully. It's not. Huh. Okay, so as was stated, we have the presentation for you this evening is related to outdoor dining and sale program to address the economic impacts from COVID-19. The city currently has an existing blanket encroachment permit program to deal with uses in the city's public right-of-way and in its public spaces. And then we also have a temporary use permit process or program that allows us to deal with outdoor seating sales on private property. So these are the two sort of processes I'm going to discuss briefly. The intent is to expand our existing blanket encroachment permit program that was put in place in 1998. That was put in place through council resolution and allows tables and chairs and the placement of planters outside in our downtown area. The idea intent would be to expand the program to all four of our commercial districts. Excuse me. The current program has a limitation on the number of tables that can be placed outside, and that limits them to two. We would like to eliminate that. And it also prohibits outdoor retail sales as part of that program, and we would like to eliminate that prohibition and allow retail sales outside on the public right-of-way. There's also a requirement that the tables and chairs be brought in by the business each and every night at the close of business. We'd like to eliminate that requirement. If folks want to leave their tables outside and chairs, I think that's fine. There's not really an issue with that from a safety standpoint. Would note that there is the potential for businesses operating outdoor seating to potentially be able to serve alcohol at these locations. The city of San Luis, as part of their Open Slow program that was adopted last month, envisioned this, and they've been working with ABC about what that would look like and some of their outdoor areas that they're planning on placing seating for restaurants in. You also see these types of situations in other locations. The one I think of, and I think I put in the staff report, was State Street. You can go have dinner and have a glass of wine on one of their sidewalk cafes there. So something along those lines. The current blanket encroachment permit program has no fee, and we would anticipate continuing that. So no fee moving forward. Here's a drawing of what would we be expected as far as someone submitting an application for a blanket encroachment permit. This was prepared by RRM, and they've actually the chamber reached out to them, and they've agreed to help assist our business community without fee to prepare these types of plans, both for the blanket encroachment permit and for the temporary use permit process, which I think is fantastic. So in your staff report, you have both the siren example and the example for Buttercup Cafe. Moving on to the temporary use permit program. Again, this is to allow businesses to expand into the private outdoor areas on private property. We already have this program in place. Temporary use permits are regulated by Section 17-30050, the city's municipal code, which is in the zoning code. concept here would be to temporarily allow use of outdoor areas on these private properties for expanded seating and sales opportunities. We'd also like to allow those folks that have existing parking lots to be able to use up to 50% of those parking lots for outdoor seating and or sales opportunities. I don't know that, you know, depending on how they're configured, that you'd be able to get up to 50%, which is why we had the number set at that. But you probably could get some in most of the parking lot. We'd like to temporarily waive any associated parking requirement that would go along with the expanded use areas. And what that means is if you're going to expand the seating in this, or expand outdoor dining, you know, opportunities, our ordinance talks about, you know, parking requirements for those. We'd like to suspend that for the period of the program. We'd also like to waive the temporary use permit fee of $292. And also note that the TUPs are good for initial period of time of 6 months with the ability for the director to extend for an additional 6 months. So the program could last for a total of a year before we'd have to make things permanent. In conclusion, I'd like to, you know, recognize the chamber in assisting the city in conducting outreach to our business community. We had several Zoom outreach meetings. Erin Crawford set them up. Again, thank you to her. And there, as part of those meetings, there was good interest from our business community in increasing the ability for our restaurants and retailers to expand into outdoor areas. And this is necessary because of the social distancing requirement in the restaurants. You know, when you're social distancing from a seating standpoint in a restaurant, they can lose up to 50% of their seating area. So being able to expand outside is a big deal for them. So with that, staff does recommend adoption of Resolution 48-20, and that would approve the expanded blanket encroachment permit program and the temporary use permit program as described and as attached to your staff report in the resolution. I'd be happy to answer any questions if there are any.
Thank you, Scott. Appreciate the presentation. And with that, I will open it up for council questions. Councilmember McPherson, would you like to lead us off?
Okay, I will start. And again, Scott was kind enough to answer some questions ahead of time, but I think some of these the public may also be interested in. So does the blanket encroachment permit or the temporary use permit apply to Embarcadero businesses?
Both would apply, yes. So if we were talking about lease sites, use of lease site areas, then we'd be looking at the temporary use permit process. If you're talking about use of other outdoor areas, maybe, you know, we're talking about a portion of a street end or area on one of the other public spaces out there where seating could be placed, and that could be part of the blanket encroachment permit process.
Okay. And in which of the four commercial districts is Coastal Commission approval required?
Down the Embarcadero, we'll be on the west side. They have original jurisdiction down there, and I am scheduled to have a conversation with them at 2 o'clock tomorrow afternoon to go over what, if any, permit requirement they would have for this. We're hoping it's going to be a waiver.
Okay, and at this point, you do not know, is that correct?
I do not know. I've been in contact with them. I've sent multiple emails to them regarding, you know, what we were looking for clarification on. And really, because the lease sites are pretty much built out to capacity, there's very few areas that aren't required for public access. But there are some on some of the lease sites. And so those are the areas we're looking to take advantage of. And I was pushing for a waiver process from the Coastal Commission for use of those areas. And again, that's what we'll be talking about tomorrow afternoon.
Okay, so clarify, typically they do not allow anything like that in like the view areas, or is it all public area, the public areas?
So we have on the waterfront, we have the Harbor Walk. So that's the lateral access component of the lease sites down there. Those are required to remain open. They're minimum 10 foot wide. And that's public access. We're not looking to put tables and chairs out in those locations because it would narrow down public access. But there are vertical access ways that are view corridors that are required on each of the lease sites. And while some of that view corner may also be a vertical access way, we wouldn't be trying to use that. We'd be trying to utilize the other portion of that required view corridor to allow, you know, placement of tables and chairs, that type of thing. We have them on multiple lease sites down there already. Rose's Landing comes to mind since they're under construction right now. They have tables and chairs out in their view corridor. They're allowed to be there. It's just what is the permitting process on coastal side for allowing us to do that? And so that's what we're looking to determine.
And does the Coastal Commission understand the critically important it is to be very quick about this, because it takes some time for the businesses to actually make that happen? And so hopefully they understand how important it is to make a fast decision.
They've expressed repeatedly via email with me that they understand the need and they understand the expediency under which we're trying to act right now. You know, I don't know what that's going to mean in the end when they come up with the process for us. I mean, I'll know more tomorrow. But it sounds like they're aware of it. They're getting hit from all sides on this. You know, they were able to react early on, to reduce permitting hurdles when we, closed the Rock parking lot. They were able to issue us a waiver for that. And it issued direction right prior to us doing that. We submitted an application to them for the waiver, and they gave us the waiver, I think, a day and a half later. So they've, at least as part of response to COVID, they've been able to act in a nimble fashion. Hopefully that continues.
Okay. And I think you said it's a temporary resolution. And were you talking about a year, up to a year before, or is it just for the season? Or
So the blanket encroachment permit, we were changed that program, and that would be in place permanently. The temporary use permit program can only be in place for up to a year. Again, it's 6 months of initial time frame with the ability to extend with authorization from staff for an additional 6, at which point we would have to have permanent solutions in place at that time. And if we need to, you know, run that back through council, we'll do that.
Okay. And my last question, in looking at the diagrams, I noticed that, of course, RRM has allowed for the right amount of social distancing, but there's only a 4-foot walk space. But is there 6 feet of social distancing between somebody walking and somebody sitting?
Probably impossible to entirely achieve that on a sidewalk, because our sidewalks are maybe 10 feet wide. If you had, you know, 2 top tables, they're about 18 inches to 24 inches wide. 4 tops are a little wider than that. But the idea is that people are walking by. So, you know, the chances of, you know, having issues as it comes to that should be, you know, improved because people are moving along through those areas. We have talked with them about, like, I gave you examples because I got them and I wanted to show them to you. We would probably be looking at a little bit of a reduction in kind of what they're showing there just to achieve social distancing as best we can.
Yeah, because that is important for us to try to maintain that. It's certainly if it's something that we are sanctioning.
And I apologize. That 48, you know, inches of width is based on the requirement in the current blanket encroachment permit process. We just didn't change that part of it.
I see. But I was trying to judge, given the position of the tables, and it seemed to me that you could, if you had just single tables and not had 4 people sitting at it, you could, obviously.
That's kind of what I was referring to. My thought as well, when I looked at how they had placements, you could go from 4 tops to 2 tops, and that would probably achieve the desired result.
Yeah, I just think it's important. So anyway, thank you. Those are my questions. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Councilmember Davis, question, sir.
I want to thank Marlis. She asked my question, so appreciate it, Marlis.
Great, okay. And Councilmember Addis, questions.
I don't really have questions, but I'm super excited about these possibilities, and I do want to say thank you to the Chamber and thank you to the Community Development Director and the whole department and the City Manager and probably the mayor and others of my colleagues on council who have worked on this. It's something that I remember talking about before when I was campaigning, before I was even on council, and listening to various residents and business owners talk about what they thought would make a vibrant Morro Bay. And outdoor dining came up time and again, but we thought it may never happen. So I don't want to say that COVID is good, because it's not, but sometimes we talk about silver linings, and I do believe this could be one for Morro Bay. So I'm very excited that we get to talk about this and vote, hopefully.
Thank you for that. And Councilmember Heller, sir, questions?
Yes. Well, the urgency, obviously, to restaurant owners is critical. I'm just wondering, Mr. Graham, is RRM and your department able to keep up with all the requests and plans and all that stuff that people want?
Folks know that we're going down this road. We obviously, the council's gotten a lot of correspondence on this item this evening, and so they're aware of it. We've only had a couple of plans submitted to us. I know RRM was working on plans for a couple of other folks as well. They were concerned that they couldn't get them to me prior to the meeting. I was like, not a problem. I just wanted a couple of examples to show council and the public to see what we're talking about when it comes to what the plan might, what those plans might look like. So I think we're okay. I haven't gotten a lot of inquiries to where I would think that would be overwhelming. I would also say that we're streamlining the permit process for them, making the permit and the application of the permit shorter. So there's like basically a 2-page thing we hand somebody and they can fill it out and then we can give them a permit. So that's what we're looking to do.
That's great. So at this point, the restaurant owners have talked to me. I'm referring them to you and to Mr. Collins. Is that what I should be doing?
You should definitely refer them to me. I don't know that Scott wants a bunch of folks who ask him for permits, but
I'll take Scott off the list.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Those are my questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Good point for taking them off the list, too. I think that's important. Thanks, Scott, for your presentation. And just a couple of questions. Page 117 of the staff report, very last item under general maintenance criteria. The owner or other responsible party in charge of the business shall ensure prompt removal of all debris, refuse, or trash. I think this is extremely important given what we've seen. My question is there anything in here that might speak to or that could be added to ensure that additional provisions for trash collection or trash collectors be incorporated into the plan?
If that's the council's desire, we could certainly add that, you know, if there, any business that's going to come forward and request, you know, permits either under either one of these, that they're required to add a commensurate amount of additional trash receptacles. It seems reasonable to me.
Great. And to piggyback on Councilmember McPherson's comment about the social distancing, I would agree with the question that she raised. I had the same question. With regard to the RRM design for Buttercup Bakery and Cafe, the way I see it, the way it's drawn, it's impossible to maintain that. And I think that's something that we do have to maintain. So I'm hoping that, I guess the question is, do you know if other plans being prepared might also be, quote unquote, not strictly adhering to the 6-foot distancing?
I don't know if other plans are not. Some of the other ones that they were working on were on private property, so a lot easier for them to maintain that 6 feet of distancing. When you're dealing with the sidewalk, obviously you're constrained. And so I think RM was just looking to like, hey, this is what you could fit out there. And, you know, my initial response when I saw their plans was maybe fewer of the 4 tops and more of the 2 tops when you're going to load both sides, that type of thing. That's sort of my thought when I was looking at them on Facebook.
Okay, great. And then I was also thinking about auto unloading, looking at the RRM design. And if you had a passenger vehicle that was parked next to maybe one of the tables closest to where a car might park, would there be adequate clearance
for the passenger to get out?
Yeah, so the blanketing encroachment permit process requires them to maintain adequate distance to allow folks to get in and out of cars. And so part of that is actually looking at where the mark is. We have tick marks on the ground out on the street where you park parallel to the curbs. And we would be lining up the tables so they wouldn't be located in an area next to where a door would be.
Okay, good. My last question is, does this consider any encroachment into the streets with regard to the potential construction of parklets, or is that a totally separate issue?
Did not, well, given the short amount of time to bring this to fruition, did not envision the bringing something forward as it relates to a plan for parklets. Certainly, as a future agenda item, if the council is interested in that, you could have a conversation at the end of this meeting about that. And we could bring something forward related to that. I mean, it's not breaking new ground. There are lots of examples of parklet programs out there. So we could just grab a couple examples and bring something forward if that was the desire of the council.
Okay. Thank you for that. I appreciate that. With that, that's all the questions I have. I'll go ahead and open up public comment. Zeke, do we have any members of the public that would like to comment on item C-2?
Yes, sir. Mr. John Weiss is on the line.
Okay.
Go ahead, Mr. Weiss.
Thank you, Council and Mayor and citizens. This is an issue I'm pretty passionate about. I appreciate the comments by Councilwoman Addis. I love this opportunity. I believe that there are some businesses like the Siren and others that for them to survive or thrive, this is an absolute, or they will could considerably conceivably shut down. And you know, and they're not alone. I think there's a lot of businesses that are struggling because of the seating capacity inside. I also think that it would increase sales tax, whatever it would be, which is a good thing for the city, and I think that would make Scott Collins happy. I think that COVID is less risky outside, and maybe you know, that's something that might be considered. From a safety standpoint, I know for a fact that I wanted to have lunch with two good friends, and one of them said, I want to meet on a patio. I don't want to eat inside. I don't feel yet comfortable doing that. And so I don't think that is a Lone Ranger opinion. I think that people will be more comfortable eating outside given the opportunity. And I think as Councilman Addis mentioned when she campaigned, it's something that people want. We live in a extremely comfortable climate. We have great... we just have a great environment. So to have the ability to sit outside, enjoy the sunshine, maybe there's an umbrella or whatever, but whatever that might be, but to the ability to eat outside and to have the airflow that takes place that I think would reduce the risk of COVID. I do support the trash receptacles. Regarding the parklets, I think it's very important that if you choose to go down that road, I know we went down it before and it was not very successful, and we removed them. And I think that some of the businesses that were in front of it were mistakenly thought to be in favor of it, which they were not. And I would say that if you're going to go down that route, I think PR is really important, public relations regarding parklets, and that is the city program, not sponsored by the businesses per se in front of the business. So with that, I am fully in support of C2 and would recommend that, you know, the Siren Bees is a great example, given that they've taken the time to provide the engineering documents for our review. And for that, I thank you. And thank you for your time for this issue. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Zeke, next public comment.
Betty Winholtz.
Yes, I'm here. This is Betty. Thank you.
Welcome, Betty.
Thank you. I want to throw out some comments I think an example of this has already existed in front of the Shine Cafe or Sunshine Health Food before COVID. And they had tables on both sides of the sidewalk. And to get through, if you were coming from two different directions, was tight. So I would like to encourage that there be tables on only one side of the sidewalk, so you could have four people at a table. I think people tend to congregate in threes and fours and not have a double lane of tables, and that way people could walk and distance away from the tables. People often sit with packages or their purses near the table, so it's actually a greater space than what you think it is. So I would encourage you to make them single lane tables. And I would do that for the bar area as well as the Sunshine Bakery. Regarding the bar, there's another question I would have with allowing that at the Siren, and that is part of their reason for existence is music and noise. And so would there be hour restrictions to this regarding depending on what kind of business it is to keep in line with the noise ordinance? Also, will you be taking away the parking that we currently use as one slot in front of the business where people can do pickup? Will that parking slot be gone now since people will be able to come and eat? Or is that another reduction of parking? So my concern becomes that of parking. If we're going to allow people to use up parking lots and, you know, we have to be careful where we park on the street, and that's already been restricted because of pickup. And Morro Bay does not necessarily walk into downtown. You know, some people do, but a lot of people don't. And I think it's a gentle balance between how much you're going to take away parking and how much you're not. And I think that is my last comment, is that I think a sunset is real important because it's necessary to see how it goes and then refine that later if we want to continue it or not. Thank you.
Thank you. Zeke, next caller, please.
Next caller, please.
Hello, Mr. Mayor. This is Dan Sudley from Morro Bay.
Welcome, Dan.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I have a couple of comments in regards to this item. The first is the discussion that I was listening to, that in some circumstances that social distancing may not be possible. Given all the education that I've been given by the city, by the state, by the federal government, by everyone, social distancing is one of the primary ways to avoid the COVID disease more than any other way. And so my comment would be that we absolutely assure that there would have to be a 6 feet barrier in between these outdoor seating arrangements if we are serious about the COVID-19, which I am. So there shouldn't be any iffy situations if the 6 foot distancing is met or if it's not. And if it's not, then it shouldn't be allowed on that particular site. The second thing is I also agree with the sunset on this, that it should have an expiration date for review, for improvement, for killing it. Whatever the decision is, there should be a sunset for that to occur. Thank you. Those are my comments.
Thank you, Dan. Zeke, we have another caller.
All right.
Hello?
Next caller.
Hi, this is Carol Truesdale again, and thank you for a very interesting evening this evening. I am a proponent of having the kiosks, not kiosks, but the dining or parklets outside specific areas. But I also believe that we need to have a way where there's one-way traffic going through the different areas so that people feel comfortable that they can sit in that environment and enjoy their meals, and there's a chance for other people to come in and enjoy that. It also gives our local businesses an opportunity to expand their horizons. About music, I don't know. You know, we've been ringing our bell at 8 o'clock every night here
since COVID-19 has started, and a lot of people are complaining that my bells are ringing too loud. I don't know about that. Anyway, but I think it's important that we really address one way into our city, one way out of our city, close the Embarcadero down to any kind of traffic. Do this a sunset type of thing. Think about it during the summer months. We have some creative brains here in our city that want our local businesses to succeed. I'm one of them. I'm getting tired of cooking in my kitchen every night. And my honey's getting tired of all my foods I'm cooking. So we'd like to branch out a little bit, not do takeaway. So anyway, those are my comments. Thank you for letting me speak tonight. And I appreciate every comment that's been made tonight. That's it.
Thank you, Carol. So Zeke, next public comment.
Next caller, please.
Hi there. This is Erica Crawford again from the Morro Bay Chamber. Good evening.
Welcome, thank Erica.
Thanks.
Welcome.
Thank you for all the excellent questions, both from the people calling in and from council, especially around the 48-inch spacing on the sidewalk. I do want to remind everyone about the intent for this program, which is to get businesses back on their feet. We know that they're dealing with regulations that have been placed on them through no fault of their own. This is a virus. We're in an emergency pandemic, economic crisis. And they've been restricted, you know, their ability to earn, their ability to employ people and to pay sales tax to contribute to the city's fiscal sustainability. I did walk through a portion of town today to sort of observe and inquire about businesses that are closing, because I have been contacted by a few businesses expressing that is happening in our major economic center. So I'll have a report back for council on a future date. I'm very encouraged by the dialogue with Coastal Commission. Thank you so much, Scott Graham, for moving that forward. It would be wonderful to have something that's worthy of our waterfront on the Embarcadero for outdoor dining. And I would like to thank the staff for joining three virtual roundtable discussions with restaurant. And we did have retail operator taking feedback from those meetings and then moving so quickly to bring this item before you tonight. And I'm very delighted that so many of our business owners wrote in to express their support for this program. As many of you will have experienced firsthand, business reopening is really no small accomplishment. It's no small feat. Thank you to Council Members Davis, McPherson, and Mayor Heading for taking mini tours of some of the local restaurants last week to understand really how stringent the reopening guidelines are and how committed to following those guidelines our businesses are. They are committed to keeping our public safe. Replacement of indoor occupancy due to physical distancing guidelines to the outdoors was supported by the restaurants who participated in our roundtables. And the practice is evident in our county, it's in our states, in the nation, it's actually international. Implementing additional seating and space for outdoor queuing for retailers also will assist many businesses by enabling them to earn their living, to employ their people, and to ensure public health during the pandemic. If approved, the Chamber does have a volunteer lined up and ready to assist interested businesses with site plans required by both the TUP program and the encroachment permit. And, of course, there's RRM. We are very, very grateful to Eric Justison and Debbie Rudd of that agency for jumping in with both feet out here in Morro Bay and helping to create the demo site plans included in the staff report tonight. They did this free of charge, and they did it because they recognized the need. So thank you so much for considering this item tonight.
Thank you, Erica. Next caller, Zeke?
Nobody else in the queue has their hand raised.
Okay. With that, I will close public comment on item C-2 and bring it back to council for discussion. Councilmember McPherson, would you like to start us off?
Yes. I am absolutely in favor of this, but I would like to see a couple of possible modifications that we could talk about as a council. I would like to see that we have a 6-foot walk space, so that there is, I think we do need to maintain the social distancing to the extent possible. And I believe that the idea of I believe that the temporary use permit is only for a year's basis to begin with, so it'll come back in a year and we'll have an opportunity to review it. But I think that this extension of the encroachment program should also probably come back in a year so we could again review it. I just think that's a good idea. If we could make those changes to the resolution, I would be totally in favor of it. I am really so grateful for all of the work that's been done on this, and I totally support it. And I would also, by the way, encourage all existing businesses that are covered by Coastal Commission requirements to write letters to support quick action and to allow outdoor dining and seating in the public view corridors. And so if anybody, I think either one of the Scots probably have that email address, and if you could give that at the end, that would be great. So those are my comments.
Thank you. Council Member Heller, sir.
Yeah, I think it's a remarkable opportunity, and I want to thank Mr. Graham for pushing this forward, Erica Crawford for all her work working with the restaurateurs and so forth. I think if we're going to insist on the 6-foot social distancing, which is important, we have to have parklets, and we have to block off some parking spaces. A couple of tables out in front of one of these restaurants is not going to make or break them. It's more likely to break them. They need as many tables as they can get outside, and we need to do all that we can to get that for them. So if we have a sidewalk with tables down one side and then sufficient social distancing space, we have to have parklets out there, and we have to block off parking spaces, and people are going to have to really suffer and walk a block or two to go to their restaurant. I mean, this really, if we don't really go big with this, it's the restaurants that will not make it. So I appreciate Erica Crawford's comments about the intent of this and how important it is. And I appreciate Mr. Graham's effort and the 2-page permit application, RRM chipping in. This could be a really exciting transformational moment for our city, but we really have to go big and do this right so that our restaurants will survive. So those are my thoughts.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Council Member Addis.
Could I ask just another question of Scott Graham? What, and maybe you already said this, I apologize, but if we were to require 6-foot distance, how likely is it, do you think, or maybe this is a question for the chamber, how likely is it that businesses really could use this to recoup business and really could use it for the goal here, which I do believe the goal here is to recoup business from the what's happened with the COVID crisis?
I mean, it sort of depends on the configuration of the sidewalks that are out in front of the businesses that want to do this. You know, it's like, how many tables can you fit out there? You know, and like I was saying before, depending on a lot of our restaurants are small or have small seating areas. And so the social distancing required inside of them, you know, can eliminate as much as 50% of that seating. So being able to put anything outside, you know, put some of that back. Is it going to put all of it back? Probably not, but it puts some of it back and maybe makes it viable for them to survive. You know, at least that's the conversations that we had when we hop on the phone with our business folks and our restaurants. They said, yeah, if we could do this, this would be great. It puts back some of the seating that we don't have. You know, I mean, you project revenues based on tables, and if you're losing half of them, well, you're losing a lot of your revenue. So
is it fair to assume that a 6-foot distancing would cut their ability to put tables outside in half? Like, is the typical distance, I'm assuming, is 2 or 3 feet?
So, there's a lot that goes into it depending on how you're putting the tables out there. I think Mayor Heading raised the question about, well, is there a potential for there to be a conflict with cars? And like, you have to site the tables specifically based on where those, I mentioned this before, tick marks that are on the ground that you park between. You know, you have to site the table such that you wouldn't have them in an area where somebody's opening a door if you're going to have tables on the curbside. So there probably already is limitations because there is parking in all of the area, you know, all the areas, like in the downtown as an example, along all of the curbs there. So it just, it's different for different areas in, you know, in town. So it's hard to have a one size fits all. I mean, RRM's designs, you know, places 6 feet between the tables. The issue becomes the aisle and people walking. You know, those people are moving through that area, so it's less of an issue, certainly. It's the important thing is to keep folks that are at tables, you know, and so they can maintain the 6 feet of distancing. That's where you run into the problem.
When they're sitting with one another, when they're stationary.
Yes.
And then outside of mandating that they have a 6 foot distance, is there anything we can do to encourage when possible? I'm assuming, and maybe this is a better question for the city manager, I'm assuming that there's messaging that Morro Bay is going to be doing as we open up and as we, you know, if we're able to put in outdoor dining, that we'll be messaging out to the public. As more and more people come here, we'll continue this messaging around distancing and communicate to the businesses that if they can create this 6 foot distance, we really appreciate it. I mean, are there any plans from a communication standpoint that can be helpful?
Certainly, and you know, I think the business community plays a role in that too. They're all marketing as well in their own ways. So, you know, we plan to work with the chamber on that. So, you know, we're definitely open to those ideas. You know, I guess the thing to note is that everybody is doing this, so it's not going to necessarily be a differentiator. It's just really about helping our businesses survive in the short term. But definitely, we'll be investing in doing some of that work. Campaign work, if you will.
I think, you know, given all that, I'm obviously super supportive given my comments earlier. I'm not inclined to mandate the 6 foot distance. It's wear their masks, especially if you're concerned about getting somebody else sick. The kindest thing that you can do, wear your own mask. Encourage others to wear their masks because there are going to be situations where all of us tighter quarters that we would like the 6 foot or to change this, what's been put forward, the recommendation. I'm not inclined to change that right now.
Thank you. Councilmember Davis, comments, sir.
Yes, thank you. I really appreciate the quick work that Scott has done and the work that Erica has done with the business community to find something that will work. I'm okay with the resolution as it is written with the spacing that is shown in the diagrams. I think the fact that we are outdoors makes the 6 foot distancing not quite so critical. There's also perhaps an opportunity in places to offset the table spacing, the interior tables might be offset a little bit so that there is more diagonal space between the tables. And you know, this is not the ideal situation. We like to think that outdoor dining is romantic and desirable, but remember that we live in Morro Bay where outdoor conditions are often cold and windy. We are doing everything that we can do to help our businesses. And so I think we need to accept this solution as reflected in the resolution. And I do want to join Councilmember McPherson in urging the Coastal Commission staff for a speedy resolution of a waiver for both the view sheds and for using public parking areas on the waterfront. This is a matter of survival for our local restaurants and retail stores. And July and August are critical months for our businesses to survive. So I am in support of the resolution as presented.
Thank you all for some great comments. I too support the staff's recommendation, along with Councilmember Davis and Councilmember McPherson, I had the opportunity to visit a number of businesses to look at the internal operations. And I will tell you, with regard to the guidelines that the Department of Public Health has put out for restaurants with regard to internal eating spaces, in a majority of the restaurants, there is not the ability to walk through the restaurant and maintain 6-foot distancing. The distancing requirement is between parties that are remaining inside and consuming food and or beverages. So I think it sets up a double standard to mandate that with regard to the external environment, which presents very little opportunity for a spreading of this virus. And indeed, if there are areas where a walkway or a public walkway is less than potentially 6 feet and maybe just 4 feet, certainly one will be encouraged to wear a mask, as one would be when they enter the internal portion of the restaurant as well for added protection. So, thusly, I do support the staff recommendation without the additional requirement for external 6-foot distancing. Every restaurateur that I talk to is on the brink of basically barely surviving. This is an economic crisis for our businesses. The majority that I talked to were down more than 60% with regard to revenues compared to the same time last year and need to get up and running in order to continue to do business. And this presents an opportunity to expand their ability to provide services and I think save their businesses. I am very grateful to staff for also moving this expeditiously forward. So thank you, Scott Graham and Scott Collins and all those involved for that. My great thanks goes out to the Chamber and also RRM for their services, especially offering to do it for free. I appreciate that greatly. I agree with the need to advocate immediately with the California Coastal Commission, especially for this issue. So I would encourage us all to write immediately in support of this, if we're supportive of it, as not only a staff, but or a council, I mean, but also a community in order to get this thing moving. I believe parklets will require a different discussion and will have to be agendized if we want to consider that. At the end of the meeting, to look at that, I would consider entertaining that at the end of the meeting. With that, I will go ahead and move the staff recommendation to adopt Resolution 48-20, authorizing expansion of the blanket encroachment permit program and approving the temporary use permit program for outdoor dining sales on private property. And I believe there was a recommendation to review the encroachment issue in 1 year. I would support that and add that. And also previously, I would like to include my recommendation to include some kind of trash containers for consideration on the external environment.
I'm going to second. No, I want to second because I want I want to thank my colleagues for inviting me to their point of view.
Oh, good. Well, thank you. So motion by Mayor Heading to move staff report with those two additions, and then second by Councilmember McPherson. And is there any other discussion? Hearing none, we'll do a roll call vote, please.
Mayor Heading.
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson.
Yes.
Councilmember Addis.
Yes.
Councilmember Davis.
Yes.
Councilmember Heller.
Yes.
Motion carries 5-0.
Thank you for that. That brings us to item C-3. This is a discussion and consider local government action in regards to the use of face coverings during the COVID-19 pandemic, including adoption of resolution number 49-20, recommending the use of face coverings in certain circumstances. And I will turn it over to our esteemed attorney, Mr. Niermeyer. Thank you, Chris.
Good evening, Honorable Mayor, members of the City Council. I prepared a staff report tonight to give some background on face masks, face coverings, and to give some options for the council to consider if the council wanted to take some local action concerning face coverings. The three options to consider, and this doesn't mean that these are the only three, is to consider one, an ordinance. An ordinance would be appropriate if the council wanted to have the force of law behind a mandate and wanted to include penalties for not following whatever the ordinance recommends. More details would be needed on that ordinance. There is not a draft ordinance presented to council. Second would be a resolution, which could contain recommendations from the city council on when to wear face coverings. A draft resolution has been provided, which could be passed by council if council wanted to strongly recommend face coverings be worn in certain circumstances. And then the third option, which could be done in addition to the other ones, is for council to consider providing face masks to the public in some manner. There's many different ways this could be done. The council could perhaps ask City Hall to act as, perhaps a provider of masks if people pay for them at cost. Perhaps city staff could be directed to provide them to businesses. Also, staff could be directed to disseminate more information on how to make masks with common household items. So those are the three recommendations. This is a broad discussion on face coverings. Perhaps there are some other ideas on how to address this if council wants to take some local government action. In terms of fiscal impact, the only direct fiscal impact would be if council were to provide face masks in some manner. In regards to background, as we all know, COVID-19 was reported first overseas in December of last year. At this point, we have declarations of emergency from all levels of government. And as of June 2nd, there's 1.8 million cases in the United States and over 100,000 deaths reported from COVID-19 in the United States. For the discussion section, I have quoted from a number of different authorities, and I started with federal. The Center for Disease Control basically has concluded that many folks with coronavirus lack symptoms, and they can transmit the coronavirus before they show symptoms. And therefore, the CDC recommends the use of cloth face coverings in public when an individual cannot social distance. I note, too, that the CDC is a big proponent of folks making their own masks at home, and I've attached to this staff report some directions on how to do that with common household items. As for the state of California, there's a public health recommendation that states that the use of face coverings may be a benefit to stopping the spread of coronavirus. It's interesting to note the state of California, of course, does not have a mandate that individuals must wear masks. It's a recommendation. Cities and counties, though, can adopt stricter regulations than the state of California. As for the county of San Luis Obispo, again, it's recommended in certain situations, basically when you can't social distance and you're outside of the home or in high traffic areas like a grocery store, pharmacy, et cetera, that face covering be worn. The recent history of the public health officer of San Luis Obispo County is that on May 3rd, the public health officer stated that there was not enough evidence to support the issuance of an order mandating the wearing of face coverings in certain situations. On May 27th, Dr. Borenstein, the public health officer, was reported to have stated that currently the numbers in SLO County don't support an order, but that could change. At this point, there is a recommendation from the county, but the public health officer has stated that if situation changed, perhaps the county would consider a mandate. So that's some background from federal, state, and county. What's going on regionally and statewide? Regionally, some cities and counties have mandated face coverings in certain situations. Santa Barbara County has done so. Monterey County has done so. And Pismo Beach has as well. There's a range of different requirements of when you wear them, but basically there is a mandate in those areas that you must wear a face covering in certain situations. Some regional jurisdictions have considered a face covering mandate and did not pass one. Most notably, City of San Luis Obispo considered one, did not pass it.
And of course, as I mentioned, the county recommends but doesn't mandate the wearing of face coverings. Statewide, we see that there is quite a range. San Francisco and Los Angeles both have mandates. Most of the Bay Area around San Francisco has mandates. Interestingly, in Southern California, both Riverside County and San Bernardino County used to mandate the wearing of face coverings in certain situations, but recently have rolled that back and made it a recommendation. So that's some background on what other jurisdictions are doing in California locally. So as for potential action, it's certainly not my place as city attorney to recommend what the council should or shouldn't do in regards to any of these actions, but I certainly want to provide options. The strongest option would be an ordinance. That ordinance could mandate the wearing of face coverings in certain situations. If council wanted to go down that path, on page 5 of the staff report, which is in section A of the staff report ordinance on that page, I have a number of questions that council would I'd ask answer for the crafting of an ordinance, including where face coverings required. For example, only when can't socially distance, anytime you're out of the home, when you're in a commercial establishment, what exceptions. Most jurisdictions provide exceptions for young people. And also if you have health reasons, what are the penalties, who enforces it, et cetera. There's other questions. And if the council has interest in possibly crafting an ordinance, then I would suggest we go through those to get started on an ordinance. An ordinance also raises the issue of whether or not the council would want to pass an urgency ordinance or a regular ordinance. I mention this because a regular ordinance generally takes at least 45 days from when council does its first reading to when it becomes law. An urgency ordinance, if passed by 4 of the 5 council members, takes effect immediately, and it needs findings for why it's necessary for the immediate preservation of public health and safety. I believe those findings could be provided for this type of urgency ordinance. But to be clear, an ordinance would really, I suggest, only be appropriate if the city wanted to mandate with the force of law that face masks should be worn and provide penalties for it if that law is violated. Second option is a resolution. I provided a resolution which basically strongly recommends that face coverings be worn when folks can't socially distance and they're outside of their homes, and also if folks are in high traffic areas where it's just practically unreasonable to think that one could maintain social distancing. Certainly that resolution could be modified on the floor if there's more ideas the council has to put in that resolution. I will say that these two recommendations are consistent with both CDC and county advice. And then a third option, as I mentioned, is the council to provide direction to staff to provide face coverings through some method to the public. And that could take many forms. Also, perhaps council could direct staff to provide direction or instruction sheets to the public on how to make their own face masks. I will note that information is available on the internet, but certainly not everybody has access to that information, and it might be of use to simply provide some sort of leaflet, perhaps in public utility bills, maybe put it on the city website. Again, I'd leave that to council direction. I'm available for questions, of course, and I will now turn it back over to the council to ask any questions and discuss. Thank you.
Thank you, Chris, for a very complete and thorough report, as always. I appreciate that. Got some external noise there for a moment. Sorry. I'm going to open it up for council questions. And let's see. Councilmember Davis, would you like to start it off, sir?
Sure. Chris, thanks for putting all of this together. You mentioned for an urgency ordinance, in addition to the 4/5 vote, it would require findings to support it. And you said that those could probably be found. Could you be more specific and tell us what those findings might be and what form they would take and how we would have to consider them during council discussion?
Sure. First of all, there is not an ordinance for council to do a first reading on tonight, but if an ordinance is brought back at, say, a special meeting,
The findings would be that for the immediate preservation of the public peace, health, or safety, this ordinance can't wait 45 days. And specifically, it would be itemizing, you know, the transmission rates of the coronavirus, how important it is right now to address the issue, the public health emergency that we're under. If there ever was a local ordinance that could meet these findings, if council wanted to pass such an ordinance, this is basically a slam dunk. You know, if council wanted to mandate face masks, obviously there's a need now to do that. But of course, this is a council decision on whether the council believes it's good policy to mandate, recommend, or to, you know, not take action on the issue.
Okay. Thank you. That's very helpful. And you said that since we do not have an urgency ordinance ready tonight, we would have to do a special council meeting to consider that. And how long would it take for you to develop such an urgency ordinance?
We could do one next week, I would think. Could have a special council meeting, or we could put it on the agenda for the next regular meeting on the 23rd.
Okay. That's all my questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Councilmember Heller, sir, questions?
Got me off guard. I have no questions right now. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Councilmember McPherson, questions?
Well, actually, I just wanted to thank Chris for his usual thorough research of the issue and a summary of what everybody else is doing and presenting all of those arguments pro and con. And as a result of that, I have no questions either at this point in time that haven't already been answered. So thank you.
Sure, absolutely. And Councilmember Addis, questions for you.
I don't have questions, but I do have comments, just that I...
We'll get to that. Can I hold off comments till after public comment? Thank you.
Sure.
No questions? Okay.
No questions.
All right. Thank you. And I don't have any questions either. A very detailed report, and I appreciate that. With that, I'm going to go ahead and open up public comment for item C-3. Zeke, do we have members of the public that would like to speak?
Well, no, sir. We don't have anybody in the queue with their hand raised. Oh, well, there goes one. All right. Here we go.
Okay.
And caller, you are online.
Hello, Mr. Mayor. This is Dan Shelby of Morro Bay.
Welcome, Dan.
Yes, I very much wanted to speak on this topic. At the current time, five people are currently in San Luis Obispo County hospitals with COVID-19 cases being recovering in homes. Clearly, the number of cases in San Luis Obispo County has leveled. The state of California and County of San Luis Obispo recognize that San Luis Obispo County has a very low percentage of cases and therefore has been designated for a faster reopening to normal activity and normal commerce to include but not limited to full occupancy of hotels without restrictions, approval for schools to open with restrictions, bars to open with restrictions, gyms to open with restrictions. The reopenings are happening far beyond the original timetables, indicating that infection rates have remained low for the time being. Morro Bay citizens are very well educated and know how to protect themselves. In my discussion with many of them, they're smart. They know how to maintain social distancing. They're well educated on how to protect themselves. Morro Bay citizens are clearly extremely frustrated by previous resolutions passed, which are clearly not being enforced. Every one of them I've seen complaints on social media as well as verbal comments. Established fines, but nobody's charged. Established fines, but nobody's charged. It's extremely frustrating for them as well as being unneeded. The CDC documents provided with this packet are 2.5 months old. Directives by our own county health director state that masks may, or in quotes, may not provide. Excuse me, I have to turn the page.
protection to social, but in preference to social distancing, the infection rate for is so low. So social distancing is the preferred method, and people can attain that. And tonight, I've tried to suggest and promote social distancing for these outdoor activities, and I've been overridden. The council has voted to do outdoor seating, et cetera, that doesn't provide for social distancing. I find that irresponsible, frankly. I find it irresponsible. That is our primary defense. And now you wish to, and now the proposal is to force masks upon us, which if you watch YouTube videos of them spraying aerosols through different kinds of masks or bandanas through one or two layer masks, it shows the fluid going
through. Thank you, Dan. Your 3 minutes is up. Appreciate your comments.
Thank you, sir.
You bet. Zeke, next caller.
There is nobody with their hand raised at this moment.
Okay. I will close public comment and bring it back to council for discussion. So let's start with Council Member McPherson, if we could, please.
Thank you. This is a difficult issue, and we have, as a council, received emails on both sides of this, people who absolutely want to see us pass something, an ordinance that would mandate, and then letters that say exactly the opposite, that we should not do that. Personally, I wear a face mask when I am out in public out of respect and as a courtesy to other members of the community. However, I do not support moving forward with an ordinance mandating face masks. I think individual businesses may decide to do so for their customers and or their employees, depending on the nature of their business and the precautions they take. But I can support the resolution as written, which recommends face coverings under certain circumstances. And I have 3 reasons why I do not favor mandating face masks. First of all, it's unenforceable. And passing an unenforceable ordinance has negative consequences. It fosters disrespect for the law generally because people ignore it. And it leads to selective enforcement, so it becomes complaint-based. And finally, and most importantly, it puts the police in an untenable and possibly dangerous position, especially now, with the protests. Because wearing face masks has become a political issue, and I think we should stay clear of it. And plus, the evidence, as Chris has presented, on effectiveness is mixed. And if we use masks improperly, it can cause harm. So I would, on this, say on A, B, and C, say no to A, yes to B. And I think I would also say no to C. I believe we should leave it up to individuals and individual businesses to take the appropriate precautions, which can certainly include making their own masks. They're easily available now. They're virtually in every store, and they're relatively inexpensive. And I think it's not preventing people from wearing masks. So that's my position.
Thank you. Well articulated. And Council Member Heller, sir. Discussion.
Yes. And Council Member McPherson has made it very clear the emails we've gotten are very polarized on this issue. For some people, it's more of a political issue than a health issue. All kinds of different reports saying conflicting things. I'm not in favor of an ordinance because I do think it'll take a long time to get it in place and is unlikely to be enforceable. I am in favor of a resolution. I am okay with resolution B as written. Personally, I am more strict about wearing the masks than that resolution calls for, but we have so many more important things to deal with on our plate. I don't want to spend a lot of our time debating whether the mask ordinance is fair or goes too far or whatever. So I'm supportive of the resolution identified as, in this item as letter B. Thank you.
Thank you, Council Member Heller. Well articulated. And with that, I'll move to Council Member Davis, sir.
Thank you.
I am convinced by scientific studies and recommendations from the World Health Organization and the CDC that specific types of face coverings properly worn can significantly reduce transmission of COVID. And as Chris said, many authorities are adopting a wide range of measures. And face coverings have a wide range of effectiveness, you know, from cloth bandanas to N95 surgical masks. So I feel that mandating face coverings in general is not necessarily going to provide effective protection. And as Marlis pointed out, a major component of mandating face coverings is enforcement. This is particularly difficult here in Morro Bay because we have a high number of weekend visitors who come here without knowing what our local requirements are, and they might arrive here without face coverings and find themselves unable to comply with our ordinance, and that would just be an enforcement nightmare. As Mr. Sedley pointed out, the number of cases in Morro Bay has stood steady since the early part of April, even with the large number of visitors who have been coming here since Memorial Day. And I believe that our residents have figured out how to protect themselves by a combination of distancing, masking, sanitation, and just staying away from our highly populated locations on weekends. Business owners have the authority to require face coverings, as several of our businesses here in Morro Bay have done, without a general ordinance. And that is their personal choice to make and to enforce as they see fit. So rather than adding an ordinance that couldn't go into effect until mid-August, just as a general ordinance, I prefer to strongly recommend face coverings by resolution. That's option B. If conditions change and we find ourselves with a sudden increase in infections, I would support an emergency ordinance at that time to require face coverings immediately in all public places. Until that happens, I will support the attached resolution to go into effect. I would propose one change in section 2B to add an additional location, public transportation. So that's my recommendation.
Again, well articulated. Thank you for that. Council Member Addis.
Yes, I mean, obviously, I think masks are important, given the announcement that I made at the beginning of council. And one thing, though, I just would encourage all of us to recognize is this actually isn't a political issue. It's a public health issue, and we should be treating it as a public health issue. And we should not be getting pulled into political rhetoric or let ourselves believe that this is a political issue. Dr. Fauci has said that wearing masks protect other people. I myself have been in an event on record recorded with Dr. Borenstein where she said that she does recommend people wear masks in situations where they cannot social distance. That's very different from an ordinance that would require mask wearing. And I think it's incredibly important that each of us recognize that we have a responsibility. We have a duty, actually, to protect other residents. The science is clear that masks don't help you keep healthy. They help other people keep healthy. There's really no argument there. It's to make sure that you're not getting other people sick, regardless of what you know about your own health status. And so the information on the public health side, there's really no debate there. However, I absolutely understand the challenge of putting an ordinance in place, and I very much appreciate the idea of making a recommendation. One concern I have, though, is that California numbers are spiking. They're spiking today. They're spiking in surrounding counties. They're spiking worldwide. And much of this is attributed to the fact that the stay-at-home orders are being lifted. And I am concerned that Morro Bay is going to see growth. And I would want our council to be able to consider an ordinance much more quickly and nimbly than we usually are able to should we see a spike in health needs or to protect our public from a public health standpoint. That's critical to me, that we could come back together and address this in an expedient fashion, much as we have just addressed the outdoor dining in expedient fashion. I know that we can do this, and I think it's our responsibility to do so. For today, given that we have had 6 cases for a number of days, it's now up to 7, I understand, but you know, we have had relatively low cases, and I feel okay at the moment with a simple recommendation, but I do strongly feel that we need to be able to bring this back quickly should the need arise.
Wow. Well articulated on the part of all 4 of you. Thank you for your due diligence. Chris, thank you for a very comprehensive report that not only encompasses what other jurisdictions have done, but also outlines recommendations from various agencies. I, too, do not support an ordinance for the number one reason that it's unenforceable. And would cause for a great degree of consternation. However, my observation, even most recently during the protest on Saturday, was that almost 100% of everybody was wearing masks, realizing that they could not be appropriately socially distanced from other individuals. And I think Morro Bay residents get that. And the real issue is for us, as I think Council Member Addis articulated, if you look at surrounding county data, the relative rate of increase on a weekly basis for San Luis Obispo County has been single digit, somewhere around 7%. But if you look at areas like Kings County, Kern County, Ventura County, Tulare County, Merced County, Fresno County, all of those counties and Bakersfield, Kern County, are increasing at a rate that is double digit, 2 to 3 times the rate of case increases that we've seen in San Luis Obispo County. And certainly, as Councilmember Addis mentioned, the relative rate of increase in Morro Bay has been flat for the beginning of the reporting period. We've added one additional case. We've had an influx of tourists that started 3 weeks ago. The incubation time of this virus averages 14 days. We will know in another 7 days whether the impact of external folks coming in will have had an impact on us locally with increases in the number of cases. And I would agree with Councilmember Addis that if we begin to see an increase that looks anything like a spike in San Luis Obispo County or locally in Morro Bay, that we're prepared to come back and look at an urgency ordinance. I will not repeat the comments made by my peers. I support everything that was said and would agree that the passage of a resolution, specifically the one as recommended in the staff report, would be appropriate. And I believe there was concurrence across the board with that. We had a couple of additions. I think Councilmember Davis suggested that we add public transportation to Section 2B, and I would support that. And I think that was the only change, if I recall, that was suggested to be made. So with that, I will entertain a motion. Councilmember Davis or Councilmember McPherson.
I was going to say, I move we adopt resolution number 49-20 recommending the use of face covering for adding public transportation to the resolution.
Great. I'll thank you for that. Oh, okay. Oh,
you go ahead.
I will second.
All right. So we have a motion to approve the attached resolution with the addition of public transportation being added by Councilmember McPherson, second by Councilmember Davis. Any further discussion? Hearing none, roll call vote, please.
Councilmember McPherson.
Yes.
Councilmember Davis.
Yes.
Member Addis.
Yes.
Councilmember Heller.
Yes.
Was there that me? I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you. Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah. Yes.
Motion thank carries 5-0. Mm-hmm.
All right, thank you. That ends item C-3. That brings us to council declaration of future agenda items. Anything for consideration?
Mr. Mayor?
Yes, sir.
I would like to suggest that we discuss parklets at a future meeting with respect to the sidewalk dining that we've talked about this evening and whether or not we need to add them to the mix.
Thank you. I would support that as well, Councilmember Heller.
I will support that as well.
Okay. Anybody else want to weigh in?
Okay. I support that. I'm interested to know, we've had a lot of conversations about workload with staff, and we have a lot of other things on our agendas. So I'm interested to know workload for staff, how important this is going to be for businesses to be able to expand, if we could even get it done in time before summer, before fall. I'm absolutely interested in having it come back, but I just have a few questions because I wouldn't want anybody to think this is going to be in place, you know, right away in time for tourism to open.
If Mr. Graham, do you want to comment about workload and what it might take to bring something back? We want to be respectful of your time.
So I mean, it's a fair question. Certainly we have a lot going on, but I guess we could do a couple of things. I might be able to, talk with Erica again with Chamber and see if we could do another outreach to the business community to see what interest there is in the parklet idea. I know we've had a couple of businesses express interest in it, but if it's not really all that widespread, maybe it's not worth a lot of time. If there are, more folks that are interested in it, then we could certainly, bring that forward. That seems like it would be worthwhile to me. And also, again, the shape and the form of these types of programs, they exist out there. So there's not a lot of, research work that needs to take place. There's a parklet component to the open slow program that the city of San Luis just adopted. And then there's other parklet programs that are out there. I think Isabel has one. So again, that stuff that I can just, that's just assembling it, bringing it back.
Yeah. And to add on to that, parklets usually require investment of, anywhere from $25,000 to $150,000, depending on how you want to do it. Because you're having to buffer yourself from passing traffic and other parking spaces. So yeah, it requires a significant investment on the behalf of a business owner. So, I think we sort of looked at parklets as a really good idea and part of a phase two and see how this extension of outdoor dining goes. And as Scott was saying, sort of gauge the interest of our restaurants because they're in survival mode right now, probably not investing in significant infrastructure at this point, which would be required to make parklets work effectively. So that's just one thing to consider. But as Scott said, the guidelines and all the templates for the program wouldn't take a whole lot to put together. It's just what's the level of interest at this time, given you have to invest in protecting your clientele from traffic and other cars.
Perhaps the first report may well be interest, and we can certainly agendize that, bring that back, and if there was little or no interest, proceed or not proceed.
Yeah, we could create the policy. It's just, and then just see who the bidders are out there for it.
Okay.
We've had history with parklets in the past, and so it's something we want to maybe explored a little differently than we did in the past where we had some false starts. But I think there, as Scott said, I think there's general interest and
We can do a little bit of outreach with Erica. But I'd say just recognizing where we're at, that we have one more meeting in June and then a July meeting, and then we're off until August. This would probably be more of an August, September venture.
Right. And I know we're pretty impacted on schedule as well. So, good. Any other items for future agenda?
No, but I just wanted to weigh in on this.
Oh, thank you, Marla.
Yeah. The only one who didn't. I would support our discussing it, but I totally agree that we should first find out the interest of the businesses in even doing it before we move forward with it at all. So I appreciate the conversation that was just held, and I agree with it.
Great. Okay. Any other items? Hearing none. I will adjourn the meeting. The next regular meeting of the Morro Bay City Council will be held on Tuesday, June 23rd, 2020 at 5:30 p.m. via teleconference. Thank you. Have a good evening. Be safe and be well.
Thank you.